This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.
Ian Boltzmann. FUBAR Radio.
What do you want? What do you want? Hello, it's Monday. It's...
not August, it's July. I've got the wrong month.
It's the 22nd of August, apparently.
It's July. It may not even be that, to be honest.
Just make you think you're in a coma. You've been in a coma, maybe.
It's July, not August.
It's the 22nd of July. Yeah, it's Monday at 4 p.m. Welcome to the show. Coming up on the show today, yeah, I don't think you'll have heard of any of these, by the way, just in case you're holding out for
a
star.
Might be.
4:30, Edwin Ashcroft. By the way, I'm not saying that in a judgmental way. I don't need a star on the show.
No.
There is a star on the show
it's
already.
You, isn't it?
Yeah. So in a sense, it's superfluous, isn't it?
Don't need any more stars.
To add stars. I felt that when Mid-Jaw came in. Mm. But the first guest today at 4:30 is Edwin Ashcroft. He's in the studio talking about his new play, Daphne, Tommy, the Colonel and Phil, on at the Union Theatre from 23rd of July to 3rd of August. Had it been August, you would have missed that. Yeah.
The theatre bar, yes.
Then at 5 p.m, Buddy Galore's in the studio. Real name, Buddy Galore.
No.
Talking about a new series of her show, Buddy Galore's Movie Nightmares, on Showcase TV and Sky. What's that show?
Buddy Galore's Movie Nightmares.
What is it?
She's a drag artist, Bunny, you know. You might have seen
her. Have I seen that?
You probably have, yeah.
Then at 5:30 p.m, Benedict Martin is in the studio talking about Horrible Histories live on stage at the Apollo Theatre in Birmingham.
That's what it's called. It's called live on. I'm just put that there.
It's at the Apollo Theatre in Birmingham from the 1st to 31st of August. I went to the Apollo Theatre once. It was dreadfully behaved.
Ian Boltzmann.
Pretty sure that was the Apollo Theatre, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think I remember you mentioning that, yeah.
That said, I should say that was the audience that were badly behaved. Mm. The staff at the theatre were exceptional.
Okay, well, that's
memory
good.
Memory serves.
That's good. So reflects well on the Apollo Theatre in Birmingham.
Doesn't it? Go down the Apollo Theatre, watch the Horrible Histories live on stage.
1st to 31st of August. Go every day.
1st to 31st
of
August.
Go every day.
Do you think if you went every day, they would do a different history every day? Or do you think it is... I think they are probably on a script, aren't they?
The one.
It'll be a script.
The one history.
I might ask that, Benedict, later on, if I remember. Probably won't. You were telling me that you met one of the guests in a pub.
It's a theatre.
You reverted to type.
It's a theatre bar. Very nice, actually, the Union Theatre bar, which is in Southwark. Yeah. Really nice.
Do you remember how I used to always like get drunk and just book people in pubs?
I mean, not a lot. I booked Martin Hancock, Spider from Coronation Street, that way. But,
do you know,
I was doing a pub quiz.
You know the Powerpuff movie, what I'm in? I'm directing. Yeah. There was someone in that who is not really in it now. I may not be in it at all now. But,
okay.
There was someone in that who the producer of the film just met in a pub.
See? Happens.
He just met him in a pub, got chatting. They were obviously chatting some bollocks to Bill, the producer, and he put them in the film.
See now?
And I quickly took them out.
The reason why I think this works
is
because, sometimes guests come in and you don't know them, so you don't know what they're going to be like.
Yeah.
I already know Edwin's lovely.
But that's not... why is that a good thing? Do you not think there's an element to this show where the element of surprise is important? The element of spontaneity within the relationships is important.
That is true.
So it's important that I don't know people.
Well, you don't know him.
Or if I do know people.
I mean, I met him for 10 minutes. I'm not saying we hung out.
But you're flagged
on holiday together.
You're flagged up on Edwin.
I'm flagged up on him.
You know all about him now. You were flirting with him in a pub.
Well, I definitely wasn't flirting with him.
Sounds like you were.
I wasn't. He approached me and my friend to flyer.
I was safe.
He recognised his voice, my friend's voice, because he's a radio presenter. We had a chat about that. Clive, his name is. He does a show on LBC.
Clive Dunn.
Clive Ball.
Right. And we it's had Clive Dunn. Oh, it's the bloke out of
Dad's Army, right?
Yeah. I wish it was Clive Dunn.
I don't think he's with us anymore, is he? So we had a chat.
He lived for years, though, didn't he, Clive Dunn?
Did he do Grandad?
Yeah. No, I think he was only about, 14 when he did Dad's Army.
We should clarify, did he do Grandad as a song? Because some people won't know what that means.
Yeah.
It just sounds a bit like...
Well, he might. We don't know.
No idea.
He was a little child, wasn't he, when he played that part in Dad's Army?
Yeah,
but he was
all
aged.
He lasted For a good innings, as they say.
How old was he when he died?
89, I'm
going
to say.
89 you're going for? Okay, I'm going to go on... My bet's going to be...
Let's research this.
I'm going to go 92.
Right, let's have a look. Clive Dunn.
Anybody else?
Name.
Anybody want to have a guess?
Theo, do you want to have a guess?
Clive Dunn was when he died.
Clive Dunn.
82.
80, so I've got 89, haven't I?
All right.
What are you saying? 90.
I'm going 92.
Ooh, 92.
Oh, get in! What a lad. Brilliant. Winner here. And thank you very much. Thank you.
I'm really competitive. Can we do this as more? Just
yes,
guess
certainly.
Dead
but
celebrities
what I would like to
died.
Do is my competitive streak took over then, yeah, and I realised I cheered at Clive Dunn's death.
I also clapped you. Yeah. Clapped his
I
death.
Apologise. I was just very taken away in the moment when I saw that Clive, that I'd guessed his age correctly.
Maybe we
Clive
could.
Dunn died.
I would like to do that more because I need to
guess
win one back.
When they died.
Yeah. Pick someone else.
Is it bad taste though? Well, you pick this one now.
Because
you could argue that I knew that I've already flagged. Yeah, I guessed it already. I knew it already.
I don't know why. I'm going to go with an original Catwoman, Eartha Kitt.
Eartha Kitt. Mm. Has she actually died?
Well, this is all part of the game, isn't it? Yes,
right.
She has. Yes.
She has.
I'm going to say I feel like she was like 94
for Eartha Kitt.
I think it might have been younger than that.
I'm
going
to go 91.
91. Theo, guess I'm going to
Eartha Kitt.
Eartha Kitt.
Do you know who
Kitt?
She is even?
Just have a guess. Don't even need to know, really.
45. 95.
She definitely wasn't
95.
Four. I can't remember what I said. 94.
What did you do? 94.
Four,
I did
94.
91. Theo said 95.
Well, 81. We were miles out. Boo.
Well, I was closest, wasn't I?
Yeah, so you win again.
91.
God damn it. Theo, can you pick a celebrity that's passed?
Welcome to the show, by the way. Nat's got carried away with it.
No, I like, because I like the
Nat's
like
got carried
game.
Away with the spontaneous
Feel
item.
Feel free to tweet us in, email Ian at Fubar Radio. But no, for the next show, we can carry this on. This is an evergreen feature.
We can't, because we started it on this show, so it can't be on the next show, because that's the show before.
No, but the show after that, I mean. Because
oh,
this is going to go out after the show that's already happened this
right,
afternoon
okay.
That hasn't happened
have
yet.
Yet.
Have you got? Just pick someone.
Can't think of a dead celebrity.
Come on.
Can't think
he's,
of one.
He's coming. He's coming in with someone. Granddad. Your granddad.
Granddad from
Only
Fools and Horses.
Buster Merrifield.
No, that wasn't granddad.
Oh, no, he was Leonard Pitt. No. What was his name?
I can't remember his name.
Can you Google his name?
I think it was
Leonard
something.
Pitt. Leonard something, right?
Right?
He was older, wasn't he? No,
I don't
but
think
not
he was.
As old
I
as
reckon
Buster
he probably
Merrifield.
Looked older.
It was Buster Merrifield I'm thinking of.
I'm going to go 79, I'm going to go for. I think Grandad from Only Fools and Horses was 79 when he died.
I'm going to say...
Leonard Pierce, you were right now.
Oh, okay. I'm going to say... I think you're right.
He's just Googled him, though. He'll know.
Oh, well, you're out then. You're out. Is Alicia seen on camera? Let's get her thoughts, please.
Come on, what's yours now?
Because I think you're right. I think he was probably in his 50s when he did it. So I'm going to say...
When he did it?
The show.
Oh, I think...
I think I'm going to go 67.
67?
No, that's too old.
You've got to go with your first answer.
That's too old.
I'm going 79, that's going 67. Let's see who was closest.
Alicia says 91. All right, let's go.
She's been flagged up there.
Leonard Pierce. Oh?
I don't think that's how you spell
it. How do you spell Leonard?
I think
that isn't it.
Yeah, that is how you spell it, but I think his was spelled differently.
Oh, Christ. I don't know what's his name.
I mean, this is painful.
Theo, just put it on screen because you know.
I think it was L-E-N-N.
Oh, like Leonard, like that.
I think. Just put Granddad in it. I mean, this
I
is awful.
Can't just put Granddad from
We're
Only
just starting
Fools
the show
and
now you're listening to a Nat Google.
There you go. Got him. You've got everyone's notes
go
on what
yep.
you said.
Yep.
69. Who's
Which
that?
Means
is that
again.
You again?
Oh no,
that's me, right?
Yeah, you got 67. I got 79.
Oh, that feels bad too.
Isn't that interesting that in two of them, apart from the one that I got bang on right, I'm the only person who's got one right, by the way.
Yeah.
I was 10 out on each one.
That is interesting.
I said 91. Good game, though.
As we know with this show, things happen, progress quickly for people we mention. So why don't we just mention dead people now?
Brilliant. Who else? Has Stevie Wonder died?
No, I saw him 2 weeks ago, wherever it was now, in Hyde Park.
That
was lovely.
He's not died in between.
Well, he is going for a kidney transplant, though. But he says it's fine. He's got a kidney sorted.
Sorry, when you say you saw him in Hyde Park, was he just like walking his dogs or something?
No, he was headlining at the British Summertime. Him and Lionel Richie were there. Lionel Richie, by the way, does a costume change, but only a bomber jacket. I appreciate that.
Right, can we just slow down?
Yeah, sorry.
Right, first off, you missed a brilliant joke that I did.
Oh.
It was bad taste.
Walking his dog. Yes, I know. I heard it, but I didn't want to.
And second off, you went to see Stevie Wonder in where?
Hyde Park. It's British.
And he was on with Lionel Richie.
He was on after. He headlined. Lionel Richie was on before him.
Right.
And they did music.
Well, it was a festival?
Yeah, British Summertime.
They did music.
Lionel Richie did 90 minutes.
You'd have been if
you'd
come out juggling, wouldn't you? Although, perhaps impressed.
I actually would be impressed.
Did a lot of blind jokes today, aren't I?
Lionel did 90 minutes and Stevie did like 2.5 hours. It was quite long, but it was very good.
It's probably what they were allowed to do, though, isn't it? It's probably,
oh, yeah.
I don't think Lionel went, that'll do you.
Oh, no. He's given a full 90.
90 minutes. See you later.
He's a big name, isn't he?
Okay.
Excellent.
And what does he play, Lionel Richie, once he's played Hello and Dancing on the Ceiling?
He plays Master Blaster.
I am the one and only.
That's Chesney Hawks. He plays Sign Sealed Delivered.
Okay.
I'm Yours.
That's Stevie Wonder, isn't it?
I thought we said what after Stevie. Oh, Hello is Lionel. He did We Are the World, which I didn't love.
What, Lionel Richie sang Stevie Wonder did?
We're on Lionel now, sorry.
Sang We Are the World?
You know, the American band. He did Dancing on
did
the Ceiling.
Did he just do his line from it?
No, he just did the whole song. That would be great if it was just...
I tell you what, surviving members of the Band-Aid single should make a point of doing that on their tour.
I didn't know that Bob Dylan was on it. That was weird when I found that
out. On We Are the World?
Yeah, doesn't seem like something he'd be...
I think, I don't think there's anyone on the Band-Aid single that I would... go to see, do a live show.
Why? Stevie's
amazing.
No,
just don't. No. Concentrate. Stevie Wonder's not on the Band-Aid single.
Oh, you mean the UK
The Band-Aid
one.
Single.
What was the American? It was called Band-Aid.
That was weird. No, it wasn't.
What's it called?
Just concentrate.
Sorry.
Right?
It's the same thing there.
It wasn't the same thing there. I think the members of Band-Aid, the one that was in this country that started it all off.
Bob.
Bob Geldof's one.
Midge.
I don't think any of the people that were on that record I would go and see do a gig. Not because I don't like them, but I wouldn't go out to see... I wouldn't go, oh, look, Bono's on, I'll go and see Bono. I wouldn't do that.
No, I probably wouldn't either.
However, if any of them, Bono, Le Bon, some of them have left us, just every night on their tour did all of the Band-Aid Do They Know It's Christmas song, but only sang their line, I would go to a gig just to see that moment.
Pop that on an encore, wouldn't you?
I'd open with it. I think if you open with it, that's even funnier.
That is true.
So the idea of them going out onto the stage, the band just played Do They Know It's Christmas until it's their turn.
Right. So are they on stage for the whole song or they just come out when it's their bit?
No, they just stand there staring
at the audience.
They can dance if they want.
Yeah, they can dance.
But they can only sing their line and nobody else is allowed to sing the other lines.
Who's the... Bono does Tonight, thank God it's them instead of you.
So really, this would be quite exciting because there's like, you'd get a feeling for that. You'd be like, my God, here it comes. And then he'd do it and it'd raise the roof.
That's true.
At wherever the gig was. But if it was just, there won't be snow in Africa this Christmas time, then that's it. That's all they sing.
And some people just did the chorus, right? So that's, which is still quite exciting.
Yeah.
That's good. I think that would work.
I'm thinking more, do you know who did what line in Band-Aid?
No.
It's Christmas time. Who sang
There's
that?
No
who
need
sang that?
To be afraid.
I know. Been on the show, mate.
It's Midge.
It's not Midge. Midge doesn't sing on it. Well, he might sing backings on it, but he didn't sing a line. Midge has been on the show, yeah. Who sings the first line in Band-Aid, Nat? Come on. Let's put you on a timer.
Who's been on it? Francis Rossi's been on the show.
Incorrect. Fine. But he was on Band-Aid 5.
Wanna Spandau Ballet?
Nope.
Steve Strange?
One. No. Have I interviewed Wanna Spandau Ballet?
I can't remember, maybe.
I think I have. I've met him, though.
Who was it?
It was Paul Young.
Oh, yes, of course.
He's been on the show. Friend of the show, eventually.
Yeah. Not so sure at the beginning.
Wasn't to begin with, but he became a friend of the show, didn't he,
Yeah, he did.
All right.
He had a chuckle.
His money's been red at Christmas time. Is it still the same singer?
We let in light and we vanish shade. Ooh. Banish that's Boy George. Shade. Boy George is coming in soon.
And in a world... That's
Boy
George.
That's Boy George, right?
Yeah. Who didn't do Live Aid, did he not?
Why not?
I don't know, I think he was sulking about something is the story I heard.
Okay.
That might not be true, maybe he wasn't, maybe that's been misreported, but I'm pretty sure he was in some sort of strop about how long he had to do. Because Adamant, I think, did his spot, or did a very short spot at Live Aid Adamant and ripped the arse out of it. They probably did well. But why is that funny?
I don't know, it's just a horrible expression, isn't it? He ripped the arse out of it.
He did really, really well. He did one song, he did Apollo 9, as I recall. Okay.
Was that because he was given one? You got 5
got
minutes
one song.
Go. There you go.
And I think Boy George was given one song or maybe two, and then had a sulk. But I might have completely misremembered that. That might be completely untrue. So
we'll look it up.
I'm not saying that definitively.
Who else? Spandau Ballet are on it, right?
I've got no idea now.
Duran Duran are on it.
I don't know.
Any women on it? I don't know.
The game has sort of like got boring for me. Were there any women on it?
I don't remember hearing any female voices. Maybe in Pepsi and Shirley on the chorus.
Let's put Stevie Wonder on for a second, then you can tell us about Stevie Wonder, then we'll find out if there are any women in Band-Aid.
Okay.
If not, by the way, if there aren't any women in Band-Aid now, I think we should start like a Twitter storm.
Yeah, let's do it.
And like sort of complain about it and get
sexist
it all
Band-Aid.
Get it all discredited from history.
So it never gets played again.
Yeah.
And no more money will go to charity.
Yeah,
do you feel good about that?
Yeah,
do you?
Get it all banished and get it all like
maybe what we say.
Call
is
everyone out, get Bob Geldof have his knighthood taken away.
Can
and then get Midge to be given a knighthood and then have it taken away.
Can we ask for the money back?
Good call. Start doing, yeah, well, we could cause a twist, don't we? Start demanding your money back.
Yeah, from, you say anyone that donated,
yeah,
you want your money back from it.
And they can't come back and go, oh, but Sonia was in the second one. Right, it's got to be the first
one. The original one.
It's got to be the proper one.
Kylie did the second one.
Yeah,
not Bross interested
were on
in that.
It and everything,
Jamelia did one. Not interested.
Yeah, let's start a twist.
Okay.
Let's bring down Band-Aid.
Take it.
And by association, bring down Twitter storms.
She was 5 and I was 6. We rode on horses made of sticks. I wore black and she wore white. She would always win the fight. Bang, bang.
Bang Bang, one of his 2 minute songs. How many
cover,
songs did
cover,
he do?
Nancy Sinatra cover.
Over that, yeah. But how long, if he did like 2.5 hours.
He did a lot.
Must have been
songs.
Knackered.
There was a point, it's called the Stevie Wonder Song Party, and he has a DJ on stage with him where they were playing clips from what I've
Jazzy
learned.
Jeff or not?
It wasn't Jazzy
I would have
Jeff.
Used Jazzy Jeff myself.
I think Naprash Prince has him.
Maybe Will Smith won't release him.
Maybe.
Even
but
for Stevie Wonder.
He was just playing clips of songs of people that have died. So.
Oh.
Bob Marley.
I don't think we're in a position at the moment
Michael
to
Jackson,
be pious about that, given
Aretha
that we played
Franklin.
A game early on where we had to guess people's ages when they died.
Good point. Amy Winehouse, and it was like a little party, and I was going, oh, Prince, he played When Doves Cry.
That's nice.
It was like a 50-minute interlude of people, dead people singing.
And that is a sad thing.
Hmm.
Who's going to do a party for Stevie Wonder when he dies? Who's left?
Lionel might do
Who's going to do that? Oh, yeah. What if Lionel Richie and Steve Wonder both killed in a car crash on the way to a gig? I hope that doesn't happen.
I hope that.
Helicopter
Christ
crash is more likely, isn't it?
No.
Especially
don't say
if
that. Do not say that. Thank you.
I came out with that joke. I bought it a joke.
Take it
three
back.
Three blind joke were too many.
Walk it back.
I didn't say it.
No, it's not going to happen. But
do
if it did
about
happen.
Band-Aid or not?
Yes, who sang it, please?
Right.
In order.
Paul Young.
Yep.
Boy George.
Got it. We nailed that.
George Michael.
Yes.
Simon Le Bon.
Yep.
Bono.
That's it.
This is in order. Well, I don't think it is it. I think after that people started singing in groups. But I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there, straight off the bat, no ladies, Nat.
No ladies, mate,
even though Summer Bananarama were in the building.
Jodie Watley was on it too, I've just Googled. A female singer.
I bet Anthea Turner.
She wasn't on Band-Aid. Why would she be on Band-Aid?
All right, then. Annabelle Giles.
She might have been married to Midge at that point.
I'm pretty sure she said she was there.
Yeah.
And the chorus included David Bowie.
Yeah.
Phil Collins.
Yeah.
Paul McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Geldof.
Yeah.
Midge
Right.
And many other artists.
Well, I'm sure Paul Weller was on it when he was in the Star Council.
Paul Weller wasn't in it. He was the one who had a big strop, wasn't he?
No. He definitely was on the... I'm going to look down. He was
well,
on the...
just go back, please.
Yeah.
Because I'm mid-reading.
In the chorus.
The only person who didn't succumb to the child trouble nature of the day was Paul Weller, who decided to have a go at me in front of everybody. I said, don't be a wanker all your life, have a day off. That's George Michael said that. So Paul
he's
Weller must
video,
have been there.
Yeah,
he must
video.
Have been there.
Yeah.
But he had a bit of a spat with George Michael. May he rest in peace.
Oh.
What do you think of that?
I feel like that in 1984...
Yeah.
They were maybe... Should have flung a woman on a track too.
Robert House has just texted me asking me for Steve Delaney's phone number.
Oh, account.
Yeah.
Okay.
What should I say? Should I say, yeah, I've got it.
Do you do that with people? Because I like, if someone asks for your phone number, I check with you first if it's okay
well,
to give it
Well, me and Rob
you.
Are friends. Me and Steve are friends, and Rob and Steve are friends.
Oh, fine, that's fine.
So we all know each other. But he
say,
just mustn't have it.
Say if...
We all came up together, mate. We all came up in the
what
clubs.
What if Midjor texts you and asks you for the count's phone number?
For the counts?
Yeah.
What, for Steve Delaney's phone number?
Yeah.
I'd ask Steve Delaney, was it all right to send it
exactly,
to
exactly, right? It's the right thing to do, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but Rob knows Steve
well,
already.
Fine, then, isn't it? Why has he got his phone number, then?
Exactly. Probably got a new phone. Tell us some more Band-Aid facts while I send this to
There's
Rob.
There's more people on Band-Aid than you can throw a stick at. One of Cool and the Gang was on it. Robert
quite
Corfell.
A few on Band-Aid. I would like to throw a stick at.
Ultra Rock said,
Morrissey, wasn't Morrissey all pissed off about it?
No, what did Morrissey say about it? But he said...
What did I just say?
He was all pissed off about it.
Yeah, and you
he
said
told
no.
Time Out in 1985, the year after it came out, that the project was diabolical, adding it was the most self-righteous platform ever in the history of popular music.
I was going to ask to do it.
Spandau Ballet were there. Marilyn.
Are we just going to read that out and not discuss that, are we not?
Well, I don't really want to discuss what Morrissey's thoughts on anything, really.
It's relevant. It wasn't like we were both going to go, yeah, here, is it?
No, it's true. I think that obviously... Over time, some of the lines have become slightly objectionable from being a bit self.
But I think his argument is it was a self. I'll tell you what I would argue back to that. No one on the original Band-Aid needed a career lift. Except for Geldof, in
fairness. Maybe, because you're right. At that time, with Spandau Ballet, Duran Duran, Heaven 17, Wham, Culture Club, Status Quo, they were huge. Cool and the Gang, yeah. Bananarama, Style Council.
Just reading out Band-Aid now.
Well, David Bowie, like Holly Johnson. I didn't know he was on the B side.
So they didn't need to be, but self-righteous, perhaps. Was it self-righteous?
They didn't need the PR for themselves.
Not listening to me. Was it self-righteous?
No.
Do you think?
No. Well, it was a good look to be on it at the time, wasn't it? I imagine you wouldn't want to be the person going.
So that's good publicity, then, isn't it?
Yeah,
that's different. Self-righteous, then.
Yeah.
Self-righteous is kind of what they call virtue signaling now, I guess.
Mm.
Being, you know, quite showing off about what you're doing and being very like there was an air of that to Geldof at Live Aid when he was shouting at people to give the fucking money.
Send
and
us
all
your
that.
Fucking money,
yeah.
He said, didn't he, when people weren't donating enough.
But what harm did it do?
Nothing.
No,
I
did it or not? I don't know if he did or
for
not.
For who?
Anyone. Did it do any harm? Did Band-Aid do any harm or did it do any good, Nat? What do you
it definitely did good in that it raised money, a lot of money,
yeah.
to help with charity.
Yes.
Same with the thingy, the concert, the little concert they put on. Little,
they, put
big
on, that,
on
it. They did that little concert, didn't they, Wembley?
Live Aid.
Did it in the Wembley studio.
There's a pub in Wembley, I believe, in the back room there. They put on, it's where Queen famously, where they came out.
Yeah.
That little
Queen weren't on the original Band-Aid, were they not?
They were not.
Because I'm gonna know. I know this. I know why. Because I saw Bohemian Rhapsody. It's because Freddie Mercury had AIDS. That was why it was. I'm pretty sure that's what they said in the film.
Well, according to the film, he told them just before they went on stage.
Yeah, he didn't.
Which
did he?
Didn't happen. That's not how it happened at
it's
all.
Like 9 years later.
And then, yeah, right. Exactly. And then when he came on stage, that was like the final gig, but it wasn't, was it? So.
What did you see Bohemian Rhapsody?
I did.
Film?
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that? On changing something that I would. Like, is it even recent history? Because it feels like recent history for me because it was in my lifetime. So I'm now in generationally quite interesting for me in that now there are stories being told that occurred during my lifetime. But when I was growing up, the stories that were being told in films were invariably from before my lifetime or very early in my lifetime. Sure. So now it feels like, that was only like, that wasn't long ago that, but it was kind of longer.
20 years ago? 30?
84, was it Live Aid?
Yeah, Live Aid. Did he die that year, Freddie Mercury?
Oh, he died in the 90s, 90 something.
Right. He did, didn't he? Yeah. There's a long time after Live Aid.
So what are your thoughts on a film like that altering
the course of history?
Quite significantly that as well.
With a
I
big
would say.
Time frame.
Yeah.
I think I wasn't a fan.
Of the film?
No.
Why not?
It's Honestly, I saw a
star, divided my friends.
I saw A Star Is Born with Bradley Cooper. The music thing, and
it's
I thought
on Sky that might watch it, that.
I thought, how could anyone watch Bohemian Rhapsody and not appreciate that Bradley Cooper, that Oscar should have been his? Rami, for me at first, I thought, oh, he's popped some teeth in. Is this what's happening?
Right.
It took me a while to go, like, is this a good performance? I don't know. I can't tell. I wasn't sure. By the end of it, I was all right.
I don't think it was a bad performance at all.
I don't think it was bad. I didn't love it. It felt to me like a Lifetime film. You know, one of the Lifetime channel. It was one of those, like, or Channel 5 sort of films.
I think it was a bit better than that for me. A
little bit, but...
But I hear what you're saying.
It didn't...
I was surprised by how many people were blown away by it.
Right, me too.
And I was surprised by how many people... I was actually surprised by how many people thought Queen were brilliant at the Oscars.
What do you mean?
That shocked me.
What do you mean? They weren't at the Oscars,
Queen opened the Oscars, I think.
Oh, with Rami on singing?
Yeah, yeah. No, no, with someone else, the other
Adam
bloke.
Adam Lambert?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was... I thought it was awful. Like, it really bothered me.
It does bother me slightly there is a Queen at all without Freddie Mercury. Because, well, then you're not going
to
get anyone...
She's got nothing to do with it, though. I don't think we should kill her just because...
But I just felt like he was the big icon. I mean, everyone knows Brian May and the other two, but Roger Taylor...
No, I disagree with you there. Deacon. I don't think, well, if John Deacon had died, they should have carried on either. Or if Brian May had died, they should have carried on either. Yeah. I think they were a foursome unit, so... Mm. But, same time, one of them's taken prematurely, what do the other ones do? Now, the thing is, they were all sort of pretty successful musicians in their own right anyway.
Yeah.
So they could have just pursued that, or formed a new group. Mm-hmm. Or Brian May, Roger Taylor, could have formed a new group, called it something different, and still played Queen songs, and no issue with that at all.
Yeah.
I think it's the idea of still trading on the name Queen that feels slightly off when John Deacon did go, no, I'm done, that's me.
Right. Is that what he did?
Yeah, did the tribute concert. Okay. I'm done.
There's two originals.
Yeah, Brian May and Roger Taylor.
Probably time to hang up the crown, isn't it?
No, I think it's too late now because they have gone ahead calling themselves Queen and had different singers. So now it's too late. But I think with hindsight, if it was me, which of course it never would have been, but if it was me, I'd have gone, let's just form a new group.
Sure.
But we'll still play the Queen songs at the live gigs.
Yes.
Give everyone a treat.
I think so.
But I don't think it's to do with Freddie Mercury. I think it's to do with that unit being disrupted. Okay. It's not to do with one person can't do it without them, but you could do it without others.
Let's go and get our guest in to discuss this further. But in terms of the film, I think...
Will Edwin Ashcroft know anything about Queen or not?
I don't know. I'm just asking. I mean, everyone knows Queen, right?
Don't know.
But I didn't like the film for that reason. I can't take it seriously, and I don't think it should win an Oscar if you're going to change that time length to make out that a Live Aid he just told them.
It's quite a run that you just did then, wasn't it?
No, it pissed me off now I think about it, actually. It really did annoy me because I was watching it going, that didn't happen like this at all. And if you're making a Channel 5 film, go for your life, do that. But if it's a big blockbuster film...
Well,
I
think that maybe you've got a little bit of responsibility with something like that to be... to explicitly say if you are altering the chronology of it. And I don't think it did.
On the beginning, some of these things are entirely fictitious and made up.
Yeah,
some
films do that, don't they? Due to the nature of dramatisation.
Yeah, of course, they do say that. Like, some characters aren't...
Names
been
changed.
Up. Yeah. They
some
did that in Chernobyl.
Some characters have been amalgamated.
Hmm.
That Mike Myers character, he didn't exist.
He wasn't
a real character.
Well, I hate this film now that you said that.
Why?
Making up characters and changing things? The film's a load of bullshit.
Right.
Well, I didn't know I felt like that until this
I liked
came
Queen
out
when
today.
I was a kid, but I wouldn't say I was a massive Queen fan anyway. Really,
me not me neither. Actually,
but I didn't like all that South Africa stuff. Did me? That was me done.
I don't know what that means.
They played in South Africa when apartheid. I'll tell you.
Okay,
I'll tell you.
Right,
in
real life. What's with these homies missing my girl? Why do they got a front? What did we ever do to these guys that made them so? Oh,
with Buddy Holly. Today is the 22nd of July.
Not August, as I put earlier.
We're joined by a guest now. Mm-hmm. We're joined by Edwin Ashcroft. We're going to be talking about Daphne, Tommy, the Colonel and Phil.
Hello!
Hello! That's it! Look at that scene. Now that's how you come
oh,
in
yeah.
with a
yes.
bit.
Hello.
He came in with a bit of like...
He did oomph to yeah. him.
Spunk.
I'm pumped.
There's spunk to you.
Yeah. Don't say it like that, Nat. Nat had a question for you as well. Ooh. About Bohemian Rhapsody.
Have you seen the film?
I have not.
Don't bother.
But ask the question anyway.
Do you like it? But I hadn't realised how much I hated it until today. They just changed a lot of facts on it.
I wouldn't like it because I like Queen. And I never like things about things I like. Yeah.
So I think if you liked Queen, you possibly would like it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, possibly.
Oh. Because wasn't it going to be about... Wasn't Freddie Mercury originally going to die halfway through it? That story.
Oh, when Sacha Baron Cohen was involved.
Yeah, because Brian May wanted it all to be about him, didn't he?
Oh, really?
Isn't that the thing?
Well, I don't know. I legally don't know.
No.
I think he... I would imagine that it's become less about Freddie Mercury and more about Queen now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I don't have a problem with. I have no issue with
yeah.
that. But I think when Sacha Baron Cohen was attached, I think you're right. I think it was more of a gritty...
Brian May biopic.
Yeah, it's become more of a Brian May. No, it's not. It's about all of them, though, and that's relevant. You know, they were a four piece, so it yeah. was. You know, it is relevant.
Queen, the Badger movie.
Yeah,
I would watch that. Yeah. There should be a Brian May spin-off. That I would watch.
No, that's happened in real life with Queen.
No, in
it has
film.
Been. It has been a Brian May
he's
spin-off.
He's into like, what's he into? He's into badgers, right? I think he's into stars as
Do
well.
Do you know what? I used to fucking hate Brian May for no good reason.
Why? Yeah, for no good reason.
Yeah,
I just didn't like him. Just didn't like the look of him. Like, no,
beautiful
it's
hair.
The curls.
Beautiful
you wanted
hair.
The curls.
No,
I look at you and
I
think there's someone who wanted curly
I
hair.
I wouldn't want, no, I think mine looks brilliant, all wavy and scruffy and that.
But I think you could suit a perm too.
Nope. But then I saw Brian May, this is so weird, present a TV show about 3D.
Right.
He's an expert on 3D, Brian.
Oh, is he?
May. Yeah.
He is. What's an expert on 3D?
He knows how it all works and all that. He can tell you how it all works and the history of it. And the evolution of 3D and the different sorts of 3D. And I watched that, I was like...
3D as in films rather than like the difference between a square and a cube.
Like 3D as in the perception of three dimensions.
Oh.
So anything you wear glasses for, then he's an expert on it. And I thought he was brilliant. It was on Sky 3D when that was a proper thing.
You know he's a guitarist as well.
That doesn't bother me that. I was far more interested.
Right. He's into science, isn't he?
Well, that's probably all part and parcel.
Probably
isn't it?
Is.
A bit boffing, isn't he, Brian?
He's a little bit going out with Anita Dobson, isn't he?
No, he's married to her.
Married to her. Anita Dobson.
Oh. Started as an affair, I believe. That.
Oh, I don't know. Don't know about that.
Ooh. Again,
I'm
don't
gonna,
know.
I'm not going to.
Should we speak about your film?
Yes.
Yeah.
Unless you want to talk about 3D, we can talk about 3D. Do you like 3D?
The play's in 3D, so I suppose I do.
Very, very clever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Daphne, Tommy, the Colonel, and Phil now in 3D.
Now. That's almost worth a sticker, isn't it? That's almost worth whacking another 50 on the budget and going, I've got these stickers, I think it's really funny.
No one's doing that. 3D plays. Yeah. How often do you see a play advertised as 3D?
Never.
Loads at Christmas.
Do you?
Yeah. Pantomimes incorporate 3D now.
Oh, do they?
Where you put glasses on and you have a big 3D bit.
And people go, whoa, it's in 3D now.
Yeah. But it's normally like something like going through a cave. I saw Aladdin at the Bradford Alhambra last year. Ooh. With Christopher Biggins. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sat with him, he was in it. And Billy Pearce, as always. And that bloke out of blue.
Duncan?
Can't remember
Anthony,
his name. Can't remember
Lee,
his
name. Simon.
One of them.
Blue.
Oh, no.
And they had a 3D bit in the middle of it. And it was actually really cool. I liked it.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was the magic carpet ride, which they did in real life first, and then they did like a zoom in thing, and it was like 3D. I really liked it. I don't think they sang that. I don't recall them singing that.
What's the
song.
Point? Then what's the point of Aladdin?
How old are you?
28.
So were you born after Aladdin came out?
I don't know, but I've seen all the Disney films.
91, I want to go.
Yeah.
The Robin Williams.
I saw them all one summer, so the. Chronologies.
Really? Now, was this because of a relationship? Did somebody make you watch them?
No, I think it was me.
Are you sure? Because you paused for a second there, where it was like somebody dragged you through Disney, didn't they? That's what it's like. It was all one sort. Why did you do it then? What was the reasoning behind that?
I think, I don't know, it's just so good.
It's clearly.
Once you've seen a bit, you're in, aren't you?
You
with
think?
Disney.
What's your best one?
This is really discrediting.
No, it's fine. No, not at all. I'm a bit like Disney.
Disney's quite popular, so I don't think it is.
What's your best one out of Disney films?
Ooh.
You can't have Avengers
or Lion King. You can't say Lion King.
But, you can say Lion King.
Yeah, but it's not. It's Aristocats.
Oh, okay.
The Aristocats. Yeah. What's yours, Nat?
A Light Lady and the Tramp, that was nice.
That's the one I haven't seen.
That's because you like spaghetti though, isn't it?
I do like spaghetti,
just wind, you wind it
that's
back.
That's the only way I eat spaghetti.
Yeah.
So it's difficult.
But you do it with yourself, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
You have one long thing of spaghetti that you then put back in your own mouth and
I
you
do.
Just suck it and kiss yourself.
That's
it's heartbreaking
exactly.
in many ways.
What you've seen me eating spaghetti, it's not nice.
It's kind of erotic.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are the eponymous Daphne, Tommy and the Colonel and Phil?
Well, Daphne and Tommy
do we know?
Are... Yep.
Can I guess?
Well, there's some mystery. The Colonel we don't know a lot about at the beginning.
Is it
Colonel?
Gong. I think it's Daphne from Daphne and Celeste. Tommy Cannon from Cannon and Ball.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's the Colonel Hannibal Smith from the A-Team.
Oh, yeah.
And Phil Collins. That's what I think. I've got any right.
One out of four.
So Phil Collins was right, wasn't it?
Can't say.
Okay. Tommy Cannon? Tell me about the show. Don't let me waste any more of your time. So a bit tired. We started late because I was late.
Well, Daphne and Tommy are an old couple.
Okay.
About 90.
Yep.
And it turns out Daphne is really a man.
Okay. Is that a secret?
At the beginning. Tommy doesn't know. Okay. Tommy doesn't know. And neither do the audience, apart from the ones that are listening.
It's not Tommy from the Who's Tommy, is it? Because then I would understand him not knowing that. If you can't hear, see us speak. These are brilliant jokes I'm doing.
Yeah.
No, so that's it. And it's a farce.
Okay.
So it's really fast-paced.
Yeah.
And very funny.
Okay.
A brilliant writer.
Who do you... What's your job in it?
I wrote it. And I'm directing it.
But you're not in it?
I got a little part in it. Quentin Tarantino style.
How's that? Well, writing a farce. Because I think writing a farce sounds easier said than done. Do you know what I mean? I think there's an... I think you could look at the process of writing a farce and go, it might actually be quite easy. Because you keep everything... you set everything up and then you keep everything relatively snappy. So you're working in very small scenes that have to then contradict the scene that's coming after it, and they have to intermix in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a logic to a farce, but I imagine the actual direction of writing it and the actual writing it is much more different.
You sound like you've gone on a course. I feel like I should have done that.
I often, well, I technically went on a course. Yeah.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, well, I did like
drama school.
Yeah, I did.
That's
drama school.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But it's
It is. Well, yeah, it's all about the pace and the rhythm.
Yeah.
So people think fast is just pace all the way through.
Yeah.
It's kind of got to be a quick, slow, quick. So it's about changing pace. It never settles.
Okay.
It's always speeding up or slowing down a bit, and then, and then you're building up the big twists.
Right.
And, I mean, maybe it's not exactly a conventional fast. Like,
no, but what's, do you have inspiration, like, do you have inspirations on fast? Like, do you have people that you like I really like Ray Cooney. I like the old traditional fast.
Right.
Really like.
Well, I actually realised it was a fast when I was writing it. I didn't think I'm going to write a fast. I was like, this is a fast.
Yeah.
Because it was so mad.
Okay.
And,
and is it exaggerated characters and all that sort of stuff as well? Or is there a reality?
Because it's got the drag thing in it, you might think it's going to be a bit panto, but we're going the other way with it.
Okay.
So it's crazy, but we're trying to ground it.
Nice.
So it's that kind of, going the other way. It's kind of an inverted pantomime in a way. It's kind of crazy and mad, but we're trying to make it convincing.
And from going from a writer, so is that sort of dangerous thing to have a writer direct as well? How are you with that?
Yeah, well, it's impossible to tell. I have to wait and see what people say. Because you lose perspective, especially when I'm in a couple of scenes. You're really like, what the fuck is happening now? Because I can't see what I'm doing. I already wrote it. How is this going to go
down? But when you watch it in rehearsal or whatever, in the bits you're not in, when you've got a director sign and that, are you enjoying it?
Yeah, when they do what I say.
I'm a bit like that.
Yeah.
I think
the thing is, actors like to express themselves.
Stupid, isn't it? I think dictatorial is the way forward.
Yeah.
If you're an auteur.
Okay.
I think if it's something, if you are a creator of work and you have a vision for work, none of this. Oh, let's collaborate.
Like, improvising.
Literally.
Yeah. It's
no, you do what I say. If it goes wrong, it's my fault.
Okay. Well, in principle, at the beginning, I say, look, just express yourselves. This is about you.
Yeah.
Find your journey.
Yeah. And then
they start doing. Like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
Why are you doing that?
They're not Jamaican.
Yeah.
this character, what are you doing? Yeah, I agree with you.
No workshopping. You're like, here's the line, do it or get out.
No, I think Edwin's right. I think there should be an element of where you make it look like you're being, hey.
Yeah, and they say, oh, can I do this? Can I pop this line? Like, yeah. And then a week later, let's cut that line. Yeah,
let's try that first of all. Let's try that. Okay, let's keep that as it is for the moment. and then we'll have a look later on. Then later on, night before the first performance, go, look, this isn't, that's got to go, that's got to go. All the pleasantries go until you eventually just literally scribble off everything apart from your own ideas.
So can you say it in a nicer way and go, oh, for timing purposes, it's a little bit over, so we'll just cut this, this, and this, everything that I did right.
Oh, no, we're going to have to cut that line.
Yeah, and I really like that. Oh, I love that bit.
How long is your play?
About 2 hours.
Okay.
I think. Again, because...
It's already open, isn't it?
Tomorrow.
Okay, so there's still time for it to have half hour shaved off it. And everyone else's ideas.
You can walk out half an hour before the end.
Would I lose anything by doing that?
No, you wouldn't want to do that. You'd miss the whole big twist.
See, but then I'd perhaps go home going, okay, well, I'm satisfied with that.
I think, don't Whereas, we know
with,
the twist,
with a twist, I'd be like, oh, my
oh,
God.
Oh, there's more twists.
There's more twists.
I've teased a twist or two, but there's so many twists.
Do you think, and it's too late now because you've said it, but do you think saying there's a twist is a spoiler anyway?
Well, because you're waiting for the twist. Yep. And then every time it's not the twist, you're like, oh, yep. It wasn't the twist.
And then if it only comes right at the end, or you need a new one, then you're like, well, you then start focusing in on, well, something is going to happen.
Well, you know what the sixth sense is called in the Japanese version, don't you? They called it, he's a ghost.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Is that genuinely true, or is that urban legend?
Yeah, when they remade it in Japan, they called it, he's a ghost.
Oh, brilliant. No.
Spoiler alert.
No issue with that at all. That's hilarious. Is it a fun process? Why are you in it?
Save cost.
Is that yeah?
Yeah. Okay. And because I'm brilliant.
Mm.
Then why do you not give? Why are you not playing Tommy?
No. Well, I wrote it for.
Pass me the flyer,
I wrote it for myself to do the drag part.
Okay.
Actually.
Yeah.
But then I realised I had to direct it, and if I was directing it, I knew I couldn't do one of the main, because it's basically a two-hander. There's this one little cameo that comes in for like 20 minutes.
Okay.
And I thought, well, I can get away with that.
Right.
But I couldn't do one of the big parts and direct it.
Here's all your stuff, what you've done on according to your flyer.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
Previous directorial credits
yep.
include the UK premiere of John Fosse's Over There.
Oh, yeah.
You did do that.
Yeah, he's always
good. Who's John Fosse?
Oh, he's good. He's actually a legendary playwright. In Europe, he is like...
Related to Bob Fosse?
Tom...
Is he? I
thought you said top of my head. I thought you meant Bob Fosse.
No,
John
Fosse.
No, right.
It's spelled different, isn't it? Isn't Bob
Fosse? F-O-S-S-E.
Oh, is that Bob Fosse too?
Yeah, I think. I don't know.
It is Bob Fosse as well. F-O-S-S-E.
Maybe they are.
Well, go on.
Could be related.
Yeah, well, that was a few years ago. But in England, no one ever does his plays. But in Europe, he's huge. He's always. One day he's going to get a Nobel Prize. He's one of those guys.
Yeah.
But
where's he from?
He is. So. Norwegian.
Swanorwegian.
Norwegian.
Yep.
Oh, I got it.
And the UK London premiere of 1992 by Lisa McGee.
Lisa McGee. Well, she did Derry Girls.
Yes.
Good, excellent writer. And I did that play. No one had done that in UK before. It was very good.
How have you ended up doing all this?
And
you always have your email address on the top of your phone. Is that given to everybody?
No, that was just to me.
That's just when I hand it to a lady.
That's a really nice personal touch.
Sorry, a lady on the streets. Can we pick up on that?
Oh, yeah, that's how we arranged this.
I was at a table, actually.
Natalie is also a lady on the streets.
Well, yeah, if you said a lady of the street, that would have been an entirely different matter. But you did say on the street.
Yeah, FUBAR is a sideline.
Yeah, for now.
For my street booking agency. Yeah. I was just a table.
You
arrive
there starving
technique.
Every week.
Yeah. She's on a table. That's her gimmick.
What happened with you two? What was the
well,
deal?
Well, you were flying, weren't you?
She's got form for this, by the way, for picking up blokes and then like booking
them
guests.
On the radio.
As guests, yeah. Of course. Like, if they're in a play, I've just bought someone in from the corner shop that I've just met.
You've brought people in from the pub.
But they're actors or something, aren't they?
Who have told you they're actors?
They are definitely actors.
Did they say they're going to make you a star?
No,
what
I wouldn't buy
Coronation
that line.
Coronation Street?
Exactly, it was on Coronation Street, right?
Met him pissed.
Ellen Lederer. Booked Ellen Lederer because I met her at a party.
Both of you pissed.
Yeah, we were both pissed.
That'll be a feature, dragging people in pissed off the street. That's got to have been done. That's it.
I don't want to do it.
Well, no, they weren't pissed when they came in here.
I hate drunk anything.
I should clarify.
If it's drunk something, I can't be doing all that.
I should clarify, they were not drunk when they came in the studio. They were drunk when I met them, maybe.
Yeah.
Slightly tipsy.
So they just came in full of remorse.
Well,
not at all.
Yeah, you were having a drink with this young upcoming radio presenter.
That's correct. Yeah. And which you recognised his voice?
Yeah.
Clive Dunn.
Something like that.
Clive Dunn from Granddad and
Dad's Army. That's him. So I was having a drink with.
Why are you knocking about with him so much? I know Clive Bull. I know you used to work with him.
Well, because I'm friends with him.
Yeah, but it's a bit of a weird situation.
She loves talking about Brexit. That's why.
Is that what it is?
No.
Because he's quite kind of smart, isn't he, Clive?
Yes, so am I, weirdly.
Are you in real life?
You just haven't seen the real me. I've known Clive for like, 15 years? We go
I think I once spoke to Natalie when I was doing a prank call on Clive.
We worked that out when you were producing the show. I think we probably got you on air.
Yeah, I used to prank on, I used to do radio pranks
and
all the time.
What, regularly?
Yeah, when I was at school.
Just off your own back?
With a friend.
But it wasn't like the station hadn't arranged it. It was a thing you did.
No, they definitely wouldn't have arranged this.
But
oh, I like that. And do you remember these prank calls?
I remember lots of people prank. I remember I used to get scared because people would call up.
She'd
and
have
go,
been livid. She'd have been really cross.
I didn't mind. But what I did, I was always suspicious because we'd have people call up and say like, "Oh, hi, it's Kerry Katona, or it's David Beckham's sister, or it's Ronnie O'Sullivan," and I had to work out quickly. Is this the real person or not?
Otherwise, you're being libelous and stuff.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Otherwise, you just get the wicked. Tell me your date of birth and they'll try and work out and then say to the presenter, like, I'm sort of 80% sure it's that person, but we'll take the risk of the dump button if it's not. But then the prank callers, it's very easy to do it. You call up, you go, hi, what do you want to talk about? You go, oh, I don't know, I want to talk about the topics of the evening. You go, great, put you through.
You've got to do it straight.
Well, it's then almost impossible to filter a prank call on a talk session because you want nutters, don't you?
We've got an open door
not
as well.
Not so much now. But
I think you want nutters, but you want them to be real nutters. You don't want it to be.
Oh yeah, but I'm a good nutter. I do good nutter. Okay.
I think that is not what is wanted anymore on certain stations. That is kind of the old school thing.
What ones? Do you mean the one you're talking about? So was it LBC?
Yeah.
Okay.
They definitely don't want that now. But
what do they want now? Just right wing.
Well, just people that are talking
sort of
about the news,
propaganda.
Really. Yeah, I wouldn't say it. They want left wing too, but just people that are
Farage. I mean, I think if you're booking Farage and having him as a presenter on your station, then you're not in a position to fucking make any requests of your listeners.
But that is what they do from listeners. It's very much the different. I mean, I don't know when you listen to, you probably remember Ian Liebing on it in that era
I did
as
him.
Well.
Did
so
him.
All of those callers from those, you did him as well.
On
I can
radio.
Imagine, yeah, I can
on
imagine.
Clarify that.
Yeah. I can imagine that would have been perfect for you to prank call as well. But that's one of the only shows, I think, at the moment that still has those types of callers on.
Yeah.
So you can prank call him.
I think that is a shame. Mm. That is a shame. What's your best prank call? Then I'll tell you my best prank call.
God, it was a long time ago. I did one that was funny. It doesn't sound funny, but it was good, where he was thinking about different the best street performing acts people have done. I actually did used to do street performing, but
right, okay.
I rang in, I said that I did the electric bagpipes. He had this whole conversation about, he was like, so how do the electric bagpipes, what sort of material do you do? And then I had something I'd set up on the keyboard and I played the electric bagpipes.
That's a good one. And that would have been quite late at night.
And completely
the show,
harmless as well.
Absolutely funny. The show, I imagine it would have been, if you'd got on, it would have been after 11 because the show was on 10 till 1 and we tended to like start the first hour relatively sane and then move into towards the later hours of just having different people.
Do you remember when Bob Mortimer was, it wasn't that long ago, when Bob was calling Ian Lee and saying that his son was a really fast runner?
No.
He did it over 5 days. He just called every night for 5 days and said that he makes these videos. He said, my son's a really fast runner. And it's like, and I started filming him and I've like put them together. Like, I've got a mate who does graphics and stuff about like just fast running. And Ian, I don't know how quickly Ian knew it was Bob.
Okay.
I think by the end of it, he knew it was Bob. Or certainly by the end of the week, he did.
Yeah.
And I think people were like, is that... do you know what? That's how Vaughan L. Norman, who's... I know because he was a big fan of the PowerPoint and things like that, stuff that I've done, is now on Reeves and Mortimer's Big Night Out.
Oh, okay.
He's the third character in that now.
Oh, okay.
And that came about because he joined in with Bob's prank about the fast running.
Right, okay.
And said, I've seen his son is shit, or something like that. And Bob was quite taken with that. That's how they met.
Right,
I think.
Okay.
Didn't Ian Lee start out doing pranks? Isn't that how he got
was
into
a,
it?
Yeah, he was
Ghostbusters 2 he did for a long
time.
Well,
even before that, when he was younger, he was a big radio fan and would call up radio stations.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah, it's a big, really into it, because Tommy Boyd, he loved him, and various other presenters. And for a while, even when he was at LBC, we knew he was going to do it. He'd call up those, I don't know if they still exist, those sort of chat lines that are on ITV over the weekend. like have bingo-y quiz things.
Oh, not Babe Station.
No. I don't know. I don't think they were quite like that.
There's every chance he did do it to Babe Station at some point.
Every answer they gave, he would just go Ghostbusters 2 to everything. And then
he spent so much money, fortune
so much money on that.
Of ringing these premium phone lines that are on TV late at night saying that quiz count or whatever it's called.
Yeah, I don't think they exist anymore.
And every question they asked, he would say, is it Ghostbusters 2?
And some of the presenters found it funnier than others. Some you could see and were like, oh my God. I think it'll be on YouTube when it'll
find it. It is funny. But didn't he say that?
Spent a fortune.
Yeah, and that he perhaps wasn't well.
No, he
it used to cost to ring in like LBC, didn't it? So you had to plan it really. We had to do a good one. You couldn't just scattergun it.
Oh, really? Because I was used to say, I'll call you back.
Oh, yeah.
Unless they didn't like it.
But the first call, I think to call in cost.
I think maybe, you'd call in any number and then they'd call you back.
Yeah.
What's your best prank call, Nat, that you ever fielded as a producer? What was your moment of horror? Have you had a moment of horror you must have done? When somebody called and it was like, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, there was always a caller once I got to know her, because there was different audiences when you worked on a daytime show to an evening show, and there was a lady who still calls BBC London, still calls Talk Radio, and whatever you were to ask her about, she would sound absolutely fine, and then she'd come on, she'd do this mad sort of preachy rant about religion and Christianity, and I'd be like, oh my God, how has she spun that, and go wildly off topic.
Right.
And then there used to be a slightly right-wing milkman that used to call up to try and do a paper review and stuff. But
milkman?
Yeah.
How would you know he's a milkman?
As you say, I'm a milkman. You used to call up. Because when they have there, they have a system called phone box. So when you call up, you just put their name and there. So if someone would call up trying a new character, you'd go, I don't think it is Dave. I think I know it's your number. So
do
you
not
wanna
really wonder if these people are just like every single one? Do you think are they real or not real?
I don't know who the real person. I mean,
the right wing.
Do you know Rainbow George? I liked him a lot.
Yeah,
actually.
Yeah, he's died now. Rainbow George.
I don't think he has. No, I didn't think he. I thought he had two.
From Peter Cook.
So Peter Cook used to call up Clive Ball's radio show, Sven the Fisherman, back in the day, and was a prank caller on there for years. And then he knew Rainbow George, and George kind of lived in a house, but lived there so long it became his house.
I think he's dying.
I don't think he did, because I'm sure I saw something with Russell Brand fairly. He did something with Russell Brand where he interviewed him, and I've just...
Maybe it was Russell Brand all along.
He might have... No, it wasn't. Definitely wasn't Russell Brand. But is he that one?
Who's Rainbow George?
He was a big caller that used to be on Clive Ball's show.
He's just famous as a caller.
No,
was kind of famous as a caller for a long time, wasn't he? And nobody knew it was Alex doing Barry from Watford.
No, he's still alive.
Oh, that's good then.
Yeah.
I'm glad.
And so he got the house,
he was born
didn't he,
in 1940. It wasn't ridiculous.
No, there we go. He disclosed that he had about 50 grand.
If you're
grand
listening, Rainbow George, you are still alive.
You are still alive.
Don't panic.
He used to call up a lot, but I was always very polite. There used to be one guy called John. I can't remember where he lived. He just used to call up, just sing national anthems, put the phone down. Good. That was always quite funny as well. And then there was a lady that I really liked called Tallulah from Electric Parade. That was one of my favourites too. She used to just go, hello, Clive.
I think we should relaunch and rebrand.
I actually really kind of like, do you think? And have
Yeah, as a calling show.
But I would like that, because I always liked those sort of callers and thought, no, they actually make it. There was a guy, Wisdom Jones, used to just call up, make rap ghost noises. He was funny too.
My favourite are the ones who have nothing to say. They've just called up for a chat.
Yeah.
Hello. Clive, so what do you want to say?
That was Lynn. I remember Lynn,
Hey, I'm just listening. Good call.
Right. I would like. See, it's the ball ache of getting people to call that I can't be honest with.
You do want the characters, as well, also you do want them to talk about something sometimes, because sometimes they call up 10:01. Hi, I want to talk to Clive or whoever it is, please. I go, what about? They go, well, I don't know, I'm listening to the show. I'm like, listen to the show for a bit, call back, and then let's talk about what you are listening to that you want to talk about. Otherwise, it's not as always interesting as
but
they think
you've
got it
to do like 20 minutes at the beginning of the show where you just keep banging on about the same thing.
You've got to set it up for 15.
Yeah.
Before you get a caller on.
Because my best prank call, right, I didn't even do. I just set up the prank call. And then encouraged all my listeners to do it.
Yeah.
Do you remember what happened? Oh, God, so
really?
Cool.
Right, there was a period of time.
It wasn't my favourite prank call.
It was my favourite by a mile. There was a period of time on this station, right, where, have you heard of John... Ooh, what was he called?
You know what he was called.
Gaunt? John Gaunt.
Well, the actor.
Who's that?
Very, it could be a character. That's true. It could be a character.
The actor.
There's an actor. Oh no, William Gaunt.
Yeah. Now John Gaunt was kind of a self-styled shock jock kind of person. He was on BBC London for a long time. He was kind of successful for a long time, which with hindsight you go, you kind of fluked that in quite in a which is perfectly justifiable, but kind of was in the right place at the right time with the right mood.
Yeah, he was very successful
for a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sort of kind of fell out of favour in certain quarters, and he ended up on this station, right? This is, you know, this station, you go, you're either up or you're down. Or just, like, gets you out of the house one day a month. And John Gaunt came to the station and started sort of stirring stuff up immediately. I had history with him because I worked on BBC London years back, and he didn't like me on there, and I didn't like him particularly, and so he just started all that again. But he did a call-in show, which would be his expertise. But he struggled because he couldn't get the phones to work, could he not? We don't know what went on, but for some reason, the phones just weren't ringing when he was doing his show.
Just on that day, it was kind of weird.
And he said the phones are broken, they got a whole new phone system put in. But on the show I did with Ed...
It's actually useful, because we didn't have a number that were for outside the UK until he was here. But now, actually, we do need it, because we have a lot of other callers from elsewhere.
I don't even use that chair that he insisted on.
Oh, that's nice.
So, because he was kicking off with us, we got our listeners to call his show to just do normal calls, but they had to be doing a wee when they were doing it, and you had to hear the wee. That was
brilliant.
The rule. So every call that he was getting one day, all you could hear in the background was pissing.
I can't remember who it was.
And he was getting angrier and angrier. In many ways, it was perfect, Nat.
Yeah,
that was the perfect way to deal with that sort of person. It was at that point. That was the perfect way to deal with him.
Take the piss.
Kick it. Yeah, take the piss. Kick his legs from under him.
Okay.
Take away the thing he's got. All he has is his show and his listeners. So if you make his show our listeners, he's fucked.
Right, but I feel like, you know,
it's kind of mean.
He worked with a number of comedians, so he
was trying to get us sacked and everything. It was horrible. It was horrific.
Oh, he had worked, as you said, he worked with a few comedians. So I'm sure you would have found that funny if he realised what the prank was.
Do you think that?
Yes.
Now I wish we were live streaming this show so people could see your face when you said that.
I suppose they were live streaming.
They were live streaming.
Very good. I'm trying to remember who did that.
I'm trying to remember John Gaunt. What's happened to him? Is he still doing his diets?
Yes, yeah, he was on BBC the other day, wasn't he?
What for?
I don't know. I saw Mark Dolan tweeting about it.
What was he doing?
Just saying, Gaunt, you look great.
Really?
Yeah.
But isn't he still like...
Oh, no, He's
not thin.
He's trim.
He's not.
Yeah.
He is not. I drove past him recently. He fucking isn't.
Why are you driving past him?
You drove past him. You make it sound like a building.
Well, I live relatively near to him. I see him loads.
Oh, okay.
Do you not remember that time I saw him at the station?
You did.
And I ran into
me.
First class.
Like a frack. Anyway, your play, Edwin.
Oh, yeah.
Because we're approaching the next guest time. So, let's talk about your play.
Please let it be gone.
Yep. No, it's not.
So it starts tomorrow.
Yes.
It's on for a couple of weeks.
Are you excited?
Very excited. I'm excited to get it sort of going.
Yeah.
Because it's so stressful when you're doing it.
You okay.
Build up.
Yeah.
It's on for 2 weeks.
At the Union Theatre, which is a very
Union
nice theatre.
Union Theatre, Waterloo, just next to Southwark Station.
Mm-hmm. Is it a means to an end? Are you just going to do it and then get on with the next thing? Or are you looking to...
Yeah, well,
you
can never legislate.
No,
the,
you can't.
These things.
Yeah, you can't.
You never know. So the thing you tried to make happen usually doesn't happen, and then something happens, like you just bump into someone in a bar and you're on the radio
on
the
street,
the next day.
On a table.
Was it yesterday, this?
No, it was about 2 weeks ago now, wasn't it? I think.
Yeah.
Oh, so was it 2 weeks ago? Was it yesterday in the real world?
No, in the real world it was 2 weeks ago.
Okay, so 3 weeks ago according to the show.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Go to uniontheatre.biz for tickets.
And have you learnt a very important lesson? To not listen to when people say, oh, I've got a radio show, you can come on that. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. The show's called Daffy, Tommy, the Colonel and Phil. As you say, I'm at the Union Theatre from the 23rd of July to the 3rd of August. We've been with Edwin Ashcroft. Thanks ever so much for coming
on.
Really appreciate
so
it.
So good.
And best
Thank
of
you.
Luck with the show.
Thank you.
At the very least, it's got a really good title.
You think?
Yeah,
not too
yeah,
long.
Really no, I think it's nice.
Oh, do you think?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Now be quiet and drive.
minute on the song. So songs fade out, it makes it very difficult to do double play. I'm trying to do double play here and the song is fading out.
You can see it was fading though.
What do you mean I could see it? I can't see
it's
fading.
You can see it on the waveform, can't you?
Don't look at it, mate. I refuse to even
acknowledge it.
I refuse to even acknowledge that a waveform is a thing. So we are doing, apologies for that, but we are doing double play. And I'm going to go with Sex and Candy.
Okay.
By Marcy Playground.
Yeah, good song.
Is it good?
Yeah, I like it.
I don't
it.
Know. I've not heard it. I've not got it on my one, but I'll give it a chance now.
All right.
And then we'll be
you
back.
You sing straight away.
With
no
Bunny
intro.
Girl. Right, so it's good. So
straight into the vocals.
Right, so I don't want to talk over it because I'll end up crashing the vocals.
Hanging around.
Yeah, you've done it.
Crash the vocals.
Downtown by myself and I had so much time to sit down and think about myself. And then there she was. Like double cherry pie, yeah, there she was. Like disco superfly. I smell sex and candy here. Who's that lounging in my chair? Who's that casting devious stares in my direction? Mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah, yeah, mama, this surely is a dream. Dig it. Hanging around downtown by myself, and I've had too much caffeine, and I was thinking about myself, and then there she was. In platform double suede, yeah, there she was. Like disco lemonade. Yeah. I smell sex and candy here. Who's that lounging in my chair? Who's that casting devious stares in my direction? Mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah, yeah, mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah, yeah, mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah. I smell sex and yeah. Who's that lounging in my chair? Who's that casting devious stares in my direction? Mama, this surely is a dream. Dig it. Yeah, mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah, mama, this surely is a dream. Yeah, mama, this must be my dream.
Marcy Playground. Now, I wasn't averse to it.
Okay.
Don't get me wrong. I wasn't averse to it as a song. I felt it was too downbeat.
Okay.
But I wasn't averse. It wasn't that there was any issue with the song.
No.
Too downbeat.
Okay.
Well, upbeat.
I hear you. Snappy.
Give it all that.
Get it.
Yeah.
I think you'll find the rest of your playlist.
You know that I'm an upbeat kind of bloke.
Sure, sure you are.
So
yeah,
I'm very
yeah,
much
yeah.
like, hey, it's like, it's yeah. bit like, do you remember Russ Abbott's Madhouse? I want the show to be a bit like that.
Okay, so no ballads, no ballads.
No ballads.
Okay,
I
good.
Want it to be. I want this show from now on to be fast moving.
Fast, let's go.
Yeah, fast moving, bit wacky.
Wacky?
Get me some
sound
effects
effect.
And
stuff. You need some sound effects.
I haven't got any sound effects on here at all.
Pop on an air horn, I'm partial to one of those.
And got one.
Search for it. You know how to search.
But I shouldn't. I'm talking, Anna.
Oh, I'll come round. Do you want me to come and find you some sound effects?
Well, what else would a producer
all right,
do?
Oh, God. I'm coming.
You find me some sound effects, Alice. She's the guest. And I'm going to do sound effects all the way through this interview.
Okay.
Right, I'm not even going to look at what you're doing.
Don't.
You put them up there. You can replace any of the things apart from the outro and all that sort of stuff. Anything you want on that cart wall, and I'll just bring the sound effects in. We're joined now by Bunny Galore. Hello there.
Hello, Ian. I'm very excited about the wacky sound effects. I think I am a wacky sound effect in real life come intuition.
Well, can I ask you, and I don't be presumptuous, but do you like, do you occasionally drop in a double entendre and stuff?
I try to. I wish I was that quick on that.
Perfect. Right, so don't do one yet, for God's sake. But if you manage to drop some in, I'll try and do a sound effect. That's what you do. If I spot them, I don't always spot them. That's the only problem. So if I spot the sound effects,
the
double entendres, I will drop in the sound effects.
I will try.
Then you could be part of the relaunch of this show.
I'm very excited.
I consider this a relaunch. A soft relaunch.
Did you have a weekend off? What
happened? No, not at all. And well, I've decided mid-show to relaunch the show mid-show.
Oh, okay. A rebranding slightly then.
We've had a rebranding
before.
Yeah.
We changed
my name, and then Phil Jupiter thought I'd died again and did a tribute on Twitter.
Well, at least someone cares.
Sort of backfire. Yeah, I mean, Phil Jupiter, that was it. That was literally all the people that did it. But we're talking about Bunny Galore's movie Nightmares.
Yes.
Which I'm unfamiliar with this, and I really like the sound of it. I briefly looked over the press release just now. I'm talking at you from behind a lady.
Well, my gosh.
That was a sound effect. We missed one. That'll probably do now. You've put about 40 on there.
Oh, I missed that one. I need them on back.
So. Right, okay. So Bunny Galore's Movie Nightmares. What is the show? It's Showcase TV, isn't it?
Yeah, so I'm a horror host. It's an American tradition.
Yep.
I don't really have it here.
Elvira.
Thank you. Elvira. Elvira.
I call her Elvira.
Yeah, Elvira, I think is the English word of saying that name, actually. Glad you said that, because we're probably similar age, and I think you probably remember it more. So yeah, in America, there's been hundreds and hundreds of them since Vampire in the 50s.
Yeah.
And when they try to do, normally it would be like, say, the weatherman putting a cape on and doing the late night movie.
Right.
So all these, because they had local TV. They had like...
The weatherman, what was he doing?
He'd put a cape on and, you know, become like a Dracula character.
So he'd be doing the weather and they'd be like, right, I've got to do another program, like in Gremlins 2.
Yeah, exactly,
so,
like in Gremlins 2.
So the weatherman would go, right, I'm a weatherman,
yes,
but I've got to do this other show. So he puts a cape on and then...
Yeah, very, exactly.
Very quickly.
Oh my goodness, that's amazing.
Off he goes. He's going all the way to the other studio. Oh! He's run across the road because the other studio is across the road, isn't it? It's got 25 more seconds.
Quite long.
It's
this one.
Still going.
What's this one called?
Wow.
Cartoon running.
Here he goes.
Oh, gosh.
Just let him get there.
Running.
God, it is
maybe with a cup of coffee in his hand.
Much running.
You,
better be a good end.
If I was in charge of the station, I would perhaps move the weatherboard nearer to the other students.
Yeah, it's too far, isn't it?
Because he's getting there.
Running.
Here he is, round the corner. He's getting there. There we go. And the weatherman's
nice.
Ready to do his own
nice.
Show. Yeah,
yep.
Go on. Sorry.
Oh my goodness.
Bunny, continue.
I want that every time I come to set. By set, I mean a room this size. So anyway, yeah. So I think they had hundreds of them over the years.
Yeah.
I think it really takes off in the British eyes with Elvira, because they were doing a revival of Vampire show in 81. They cast Cassandra Peterson, and they couldn't use her name suddenly because of copyright, so they pulled a name out of the hat, Elvira. But good for her, because she became like that huge international icon of horror.
Yeah.
And Halloween, the costume is still the best selling Halloween costume of all time.
And she's still a thing, right?
And she's still doing. That's how I rediscovered, I think I like most people in England found her through the movie. And in the beginning of the movie, actually, you see that scene where she's hosting the show and the weather map does come in halfway through
her
outro. So I think I was looking for a new
project.
And
then she has to get off then to do her
horror
show.
Yeah, and she has to, like, go off and, like, and she has an adventure.
Just bear with me.
I see what you did there.
There's his closer.
Oh, that was and God. Cut. There we go. Perfect. So I was looking for a new project a few years ago, and but I didn't do the sensible thing of doing a podcast like everybody else does and making a fortune. I decided to do a very small TV show about cult movies. So, but the channel were running those movies, but without a host. So I went, ooh, can I pitch this to you? And they kind of went for it. So it's kind of gear changed me. I was in the burlesque sort of genre for quite a long time, that vintagey burlesque scene, Zeta Von T's type of scene. Not, I wasn't taking my clothes off, but I was in shows that the girls did, and it was all very vintagey and retro-y. probably about 12 years ago that started. So that kind of was probably what was best known of, a very long running show in the West End called the Wham Bam Club.
Yep.
And then I was looking for a new project about 7 years ago, and this, I went, oh, what? Maybe I'll do this. And then suddenly it kind of, but it's made me go in more into that sort of horror film festival, Comic-Con type of area.
But I presume that was something that existed in you anyway, that you were a fan of all that stuff anyway. So you can drop into that quite easily.
I think that's what I've become without realising it. I've become an influencer. I hate that word.
But there's nothing worse than people doing that sort of stuff who you're like, you've not got a fucking clue what you're on about, have you? Like, do you know what I mean? Who are literally doing it as a job.
Exactly. So I think it's because I know a lot about it and I have a passion. Even if I don't know exactly what some people, you know, I think you no. So I had to do some research. I always do my research. Are you a big Star Wars fan?
I am. Yeah.
Oh, you know. So I have a. I'm more of a big Doctor Who fan. But
okay.
With Star Wars, I was in
Doctor Who. So you're not that big a fan.
No. Did you miss his episode?
No.
Carey Mulligan.
You definitely didn't miss my episode.
Carey Mulligan.
No way did you miss my episode.
So who was the Doctor at the time?
David Tennant.
Well, I must have seen it.
Was barely in it.
Barely in my episode. I was watching some David Tennant over the weekend.
Well, let's try and work out now, because I've just said it's nothing worse than someone who doesn't know the stuff.
Okay,
so now you may have fallen into my trap. So let's work out.
Come on, let's go. So you've got 3 seasons and 5 specials of David Tennant.
Yes, I've told you that Carey Mulligan. I've already said that. That already came out. I already said that to you. He still doesn't know.
Remember,
it launched her career. This episode really, she became huge after it.
Is it the Is it Blink?
Yes.
Is it the Blink episode?
Yes.
Which is probably, even though obviously David Tennant and the assistant doesn't feature that heavily in it as well, I would have to rewatch
widely
that.
Considered to be the greatest episode of all time.
It really is.
It is, because I think it's the first
fucking
time.
Bane of my life.
Yeah. I'll have to rewatch that.
Well, I wasn't a fan, you say, so I wasn't a fan of Doctor Who. I was like a...
Did it miss you out slightly?
I was a Star Wars fan in the 70s. Course, yeah. So I was a fan in passing. I used to look at the Doctor Who exhibition at Blackpool and stuff.
Yeah.
The downstairs one.
I wish I'd gone to that one.
It was brilliant. It was amazing. Yeah. They had a TARDIS on the side of a building.
Yeah.
And it was like so tiny, but then when you went in, you went downstairs and the exhibition was underneath.
Oh, wow. Where did you say that was?
It used to be at Blackpool.
There's two. One in Blackpool, because I'm from the south, I went to the Longleat one, which is this big stately home. So it's quite pretty to visit anyway. But they had it next to the horse enclosure sort of stables.
Yeah.
And so you'd go, it just looks like the TARDIS is parked against the wall type of thing. So obviously you go into the stables when you go inside.
Yeah, it was really exciting. I wouldn't say I hated it, because I really enjoyed that.
If you're into Star Wars, you're probably spoilt by those effects quite quickly, aren't you? But I'm a Tom Baker boy, so that all through that era, I was probably, until David Tennant, the second golden age.
Okay.
As far as the general public are concerned.
Was it all David Tennant, or was I part of that?
As you said, he wasn't really in that episode, so it's more you than Tennant.
So really,
should
have failed unless someone was carrying it.
Exactly. Who was his assistant then?
I don't know. Catherine Tate, maybe?
Freema.
Yeah.
Well, she wasn't
Freema
in it either.
Freema Augustine, of course.
Yeah. Yes, it was you. You and Carey.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's very exciting. Anyway, that's what I'll be doing this evening. I'll be rewatching Blink for the 98th time.
I won't. I've never seen it all the way through.
Just your bit.
I watched it until right near the end, and then I actually had to remember to go, oh no, I didn't do anymore. Because I was waiting for me to come back. Thought I might be in it again.
Spoiler, you don't die. Still alive in the Doctor Who universe.
Were you being an actor at that point? Were you
in passing.
Were you just kind of stumbled?
Trained as an actor.
Me too.
Just didn't want to do it.
Yeah. No, same here.
And then if it dropped on my lap, I'd do it.
Mm.
But I wasn't going out of my way to do stuff.
I think sometimes you've got to, much as it would be nice to be a classical thespian, it would be it would be good if you can use whatever talents you have and specialise. And, you know, and I think we've probably ended up in fairly good niches, really. I think we seem to both have found our way.
I think there's a thing where if you train as an actor, that you are genuinely set up then for all manner of performance. So I was in a stand-up for many years, and certain stand-ups would sneer at the idea of someone being an actor and then becoming a stand-up. And I don't think I employed many acting things in my stand-up. I did it more when I did sketch shows and stuff, or double acts and that sort of thing. I just know where to stand on a stage and how to draw attention, how to not draw attention, all that sort of stuff. So I think you can apply skills that you've learned. Yeah. But my experience with it was I left drama school wanting to be an actor, mm-hmm. and within 6 months I was doing comedy because I did one acting job where I did The Bear and The Proposal, the Chekhov plays, yeah. as a double bill. Okay. And about night five or six, maybe earlier than that, I was like going, I can't say these words again and not be allowed to do anything when the audience are really laughing,
yeah.
and not be allowed to do anything different or try something different when I'm locked into it.
I think it's right. Okay, I have a theory. I think it's the control.
Okay,
I think life is all about control.
Yeah,
and I think as artists, as actors, you have to. You're told what wig to wear, what makeup to wear, what to sort of dress, which way to point, and where you're saying the lines. Inflection is up to you a little bit, but you have no control.
Yeah.
Either in cabaret, which is why I went to the cabaret, and stand-up, which I really take my health into because that's the hardest medium ever.
Not if you can do it. honestly, it's true. That's as simple as that.
Maybe
I know. Not if you can do it. If you can do it,
sure, but no one starts being able to do an hour-long show on stand-up, right?
No, but if you've got a natural talent for talking on your own, and you can engage an audience in that way, if you just have that naturally, it's not hard. It doesn't feel hard. Because you can just do it.
Well, you're the only sane stand-up comedian I've ever...
I think most comics, unless they were wanting to be like arty-farty wankers about the art and all that sort of thing, and we're giving it a no, it's so difficult. Like, Les Dawson used to... And I love Les Dawson, but he's saying it's the loneliest job in the world. And all. It's like, well, it kind of is. But what he meant by that was you drive into and from gigs on your own.
It's not,
and they, you know, you're in a room full of people and you come off stage.
It's
no, not at all.
Physically. No, what I mean is most stand-up comedians I know are quite damaged, I guess. And they're kind of bringing that out on stage, the best bits, and when they're off stage, they really beat themselves up. So
okay,
it's kind of,
yeah,
that's what I mean. So well done you. So I think that's the control. I think we as artists, we kind of want the control, and that's why we go into those sides of things where you have far more control. I think anyway.
No, you'd be, yeah, probably right, and that's why my leanings have always been towards being an auteur.
Yes, you're using that word. I like that word.
And I've used it for a long time.
Yeah, you have, but not so much on the show. But you're right.
I'm going to use it loads. It's going to be auteur.
Auteur.
And by the way, when I say auteur,
yeah,
I am doing it as a sort of a. It's a double meaning.
Oh gosh.
Auteur.
Oh.
Yeah. So just.
Oh, wow, okay. Gosh.
That was real.
That's quite a gush.
But you know what I mean?
I think we do know what you buy auteur.
That wasn't a very good champagne.
Wow. Oh, Lord, poor. That's a lot. You're quite backed up there.
It's on repeat. For some reason, it's on repeat. I can never do them that close together. That could never happen. I'm looking for air horn, but I can't find it.
Oh, no, I missed that one.
No. Oh, gosh. These are all very dark. I can't really say them. No, but you know, I think there is a leaning. I think if there's a certain sort of creativity where your leaning then goes towards, I'm going to do this myself.
And if it's just you and a spotlight, you know, obviously you have your set and you have your structure. Do you ever improvise a lot through the...
I've stopped doing stand-up now. I've patting completely, yeah. But I am... I kind of knew. If I did gigs, I'd tended to only have a vague idea what I was going to talk about.
Sure.
But it'd be stuff that I talked about before, generally speaking.
Yeah.
But in a full length show, I'd have a proper structure that I could weave in and out of.
Ah, well, that's good.
So I could drop more in if I wanted to, or less if I wanted to. Very rarely less.
If depending on the
to my discredit,
totally. I've dropped songs. I've dropped all sorts of things. Acts sometimes.
Well, that's where I'll do hats off to you because the idea of me going no, but there is a funny joke in this about 6 minutes in, so I'm going to just plough through it and do it. It's a difficult thing to do. No, you're right. I think
it's the control. I think life is about control, but that is, I think, why we're drawn to those more illegitimate.
Oh. Than Don't like that one.
Oh, that's just wonders for the hangover.
I agree, but it's not. Do you not think nowadays, though, that... I know what you mean by illegitimate, but nowadays I think there's no such thing as a job for life anymore in any profession.
Yeah.
So where you used to be like, oh yeah, it's so uncertain, this career that I'm in. Mm-hmm. And it is, in performance or in entertainment, it's an uncertain career. But so's, like, running a garage now.
I think
they're all insecure now. They all could be destroyed.
And also what you'd call illegitimate 20 years ago or 10 years ago or 5 years ago is now quite normal.
Accepted,
As far as, like, say, podcasters or YouTubers who 5 years ago you would not take seriously at all, now it's like... It's like what really.
Yeah, as not podcasters, you wouldn't have been taken seriously 5 years ago. But now you are.
Because you couldn't make money out of it, probably.
Yeah.
You couldn't. It wasn't seen.
I think that's ruined it a bit.
Do you think?
Yeah, I do a little bit. Yeah. Even though I have made money out of it now, but I do think it ruined it a little bit.
Do you think it was more like Gung Ho Wild West before that?
Yeah, then? I really do. I really like. It's about us. It's not about me. But it's that thing of. I feel very strongly there should be a marked separation between independent podcasts and podcasts from radio shows or produced. You know, that have been. Something that's been taken as a best of.
Yes, of course. Is there not?
All just chucked into the same thing.
Because I would say the same thing, and I know you've done Edinburgh a number of times, and I did it once in 2008. I'm still scarred.
Yeah.
But I found the same thing. I thought you had very, very big commercial stand-up.
Yeah.
Like the middle-range arty section, whatever that might be, you know.
Yeah.
And then another third of students.
Yeah.
Which I have no problem with, but there was no sort of definition between this basically unpaid 15-year-olds doing it and sort of artists, and then the big commercial things. That just drives me nuts.
Do you know what affects that, though, in that particular stance? Mm-hmm. What affects that is quite an interesting thing there. It's because it's to do with perception, isn't it? So it's to do with what do you perceive yourself to be. So there might be people who go there who think they're the fully formed article, who know what they're going, God, all these students, like, well, them students are better than you. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, darling, they probably were better.
I don't mean you, but do you know what I mean? So you can't. It would be interesting to get a load of, if it was stand-up we're talking about, get them all and say, how famous are you? Put yourself in order, who's most famous?
Oh, gosh.
And they've got no idea. They don't know whether they're successful or not successful. And I think the leaning is towards thinking you're less successful than you are.
Yeah.
But there are a handful who.
I think it was just
maniacs.
More of a. I don't mind it being. And also, this is 2008 I'm talking about here. I might have changed since then, for all I know. But I think I've been back to visit friends in 2009. That was it.
Yeah. Good call. Yeah.
I keep on meaning to go, but most artists I know that are doing it, I see in London. So, like, you know, whether it be, you know, more. It's probably more towards the comedy cabaret than stand up. So I get to see them here. So I think it's just that definition of, I thought the artist, people should get more support because it's their show, it's not from a college. Again, it's like they're funding it by themselves, some of them, and it's kind of rather than a university from Michigan doing it.
Yeah.
It's a bit like,
But supply and demand, there's all sorts of arguments. Like, my argument's flawed, because I'd be like, I mean, all I ever wanted really was to go, and that would include this show, by the way. So this show that's released as a podcast would have to go into the same bracket as your Radio 4 stuff and all that sort of stuff.
Course.
So I agree with that, even though there's varying levels of how well known you are and all that.
Sure.
But it would have to go in there.
This show is a show that is not designed as a podcast. And when some guests come in, they will go, oh, podcast. And we go, well, no, it's not, because it's, well, no, this isn't. But most of the shows are live, so therefore it's not. It's a show first that gets turned into it. But I would agree with that too, that there are shows that are specifically curated and designed as a podcast, standalone or whatever, and not a show. And so that there should be.
So my podcast, my real job podcast stuff that I do myself or have done myself, are all structured and made as podcasts. They're not a radio show in waiting.
Yeah. Right.
They are a podcast.
What would you say there's a difference then?
I think there's I think there's a... I'll tell you what, I've had two offers for two things to go onto radio that I've turned down.
Yeah.
Because the structure of them and the theme of them was... would have dropped easily into a radio, into Radio 4 or whatever, or Radio 2 or whatever. But I think there's a degree of, as you say, control, there's a degree of keeping it for yourself and making sure it doesn't get messed with, and that you don't go to a meeting where they go, we like it, but can you do this, and it's like, well, that's not what I've made. And it's not even that you're close to that, you're like, no, but that's, you're doing that for different reasons, you're not doing that from an artistic point of view, you're doing that because for quotas or for whatever reason. So I think there's a credibility to it. To keep it pure,
to keep it
as pure as just you making it, and I've always edited stuff and all that sort of business, but I think there is a quite big difference between a podcast and a radio show.
Do you think the podcast is more intimate?
How did this happen? Where, how was he interviewing me?
I know.
This is a very skilled guest of turning around. I think they are more intimate, but this show can be quite intimate in the way that you speak to people.
When
you
pot
ask
one out.
No, I do not. I'm not going. Not today.
Lobs one out.
This weather.
In this weather, right? But you need to. Who needs clothes? It's too hot. No, but the way that you interview people, and it's when you, sometimes when you go into radio shows, it's very clear you've got sort of 10 minutes or whatever to plug your play, plug your TV show.
Exactly.
There's no real chat, whereas with here, it's I always say to guests, it's kind of, it's more of a chat than an interview.
You say, so there's a good chance he won't mention your
show. It's a really good chance that he won't even like get some notes on it. He won't read it.
Because, and I'll say it again for the millionth time,
I agree with you.
That's the best way to sell your show.
Yeah.
The best way to sell your show is to actually show yourself and have a chat on that.
Exactly.
And then people will then want to go and see your other stuff.
Right.
If they're engaged with you, certainly.
Ian always says, I just want to get to know the person before we get on to, we always plug what needs to be plugged, but I want to chat to the person first and not just lead in with, like, tell me about this.
Yeah. Oh, no, same here. I'd rather, in any radio shows I do, I'd rather talk, like, have a communication with the host then, and then go, oh, by the way, this happened in this week, by the way, thanks.
Yeah.
That's not the important thing, because you can find out that via social media, really.
Yeah.
Most of it will be on, someone's social media, so it's less important, I think.
I think also, as well, sometimes when we get sort of like bigger name people, that we're invariably there the third or fourth interview of a day, and I just I don't want to bother them. I literally go, have a minute.
Yeah, that's
like,
true.
Come in here,
that's
and really let's true. Have a chat.
But they like that too, because they think,
normally,
I've just answered
normally.
The same questions three times, and so now it's nice to be asked something else.
My show's a nice break for these people.
It is a nice break, but it's also what can be difficult. And, most of the PRs, 9 times out of 10, absolutely lovely, is when sometimes there's a PR kind of going, talk about the play or talk about the show, and kind of forcing them to move on a little bit. And in fact, it doesn't really happen on this show. But
I've got a thing here that's cut and paste on this computer where I just literally paste it. It says, tell them to fuck off.
Well, you don't have it on this show.
I've got, tell them to go fuck themselves.
We would never have guests. I've got never had guests.
No PR allowed in the green room.
Well, they're allowed in the green room, but we actually don't have it.
I've got, has she left yet?
Well, you haven't got it so bad on shows where the PRs insist on coming into the studio, because that happens on a number of other shows that I work on, and they just sort of stand there, not necessarily doing much, taking photos to put on social, kind of doing that, and it's to sort of prompt the guests.
No, do you think that's because they know that I wouldn't ignore them?
No, because I think it's a different type of guest. I think they booked to the show. It's more music guests, it seems to be, that they want a PR to come in the studio with them.
I think that's also probably maybe the guests aren't that interesting. Or they perhaps don't have, some people don't have
no,
as much
but I think
to say.
I think they're less interesting when a PR's there, because they don't really let themselves
that's
go, because they're constantly looking over as in, like, oh, is that okay to say that? Really...
But everybody as a human being is inherently interesting. Everyone's got a story of some sort.
Yeah.
So if you can cut through the shit, if you can go, right, never, I'll say when your thing's on, don't panic. You know, do you know what I mean? That sort of thing. And you actually get a chat going. Yeah. Like, what's Vegas like whenever I interview
Vegas?
He came to my birthday a couple of years ago.
Did he really?
Yeah, by accident. He was kind of. I was just. He had been. He was with some friends at a launch of something, and I was meeting my friends for lunch, and they said, "Oh, do you mind if Johnny comes as well?" And I was like, "Yeah."
Oh,
you
can never mind. It'll always be fun.
But didn't tell me which Johnny was
going
to
arrive.
Okay,
right.
So that was a bit of a surprise. But
how long did he stay for?
Still there.
So I was thinking he might still be there.
Still there, waiting.
He
was adorable.
Yeah, he is lovely.
Absolutely adorable. But the lady, it was an actress called Sally Lindsay, who's a TV actress.
Yeah.
So, who was coming with her family, who I know very well. So it was, they'd just been to a launch together, and then Johnny came with them. So it was super sweet. It was a bit of a surprise.
Right.
It was, I obviously can handle it, but the friends that I had coming just to meet us as well, I thought, no, I'm not going to tell them. I'm just going to tell.
Oh, that's
we're just going to. And they were like, oh, hello.
Well, he drops his guard with me.
Well, he came in here and he stayed for two shows, didn't he? Guess on the first one. Sort of, all I remember is we had lots of wine and crisps throughout the whole show.
I was leathered by the
second one.
No, he wasn't leathered.
We just had a lot of wine and crisps and stuff, and Ian was keeping in control whilst we're trying to talk to
fucking
Dave Spikey
nightmare.
And John Shuttleworth, is what
but,
I remember.
But, yeah, that was a, yeah. But whenever me and him talk on something, he will then invariably after it say, I completely forgot that we were like on the radio or that sort of, because he said the last time he was in it, he said something on air that I'd kept quite quiet.
Ooh.
That it was basically that I'd been in a relationship that had ended, I'd not said anything about it. You know, I just didn't want to, because I didn't want to rake it all out and all that.
And I hadn't said anything. Ever
no,
about
said
it
out. And he just literally,
air, yeah.
And there's one point where he said something like, "Oh, look at us two recently separated men," and I was like.
And you could see it in your face, and he could see straight away too, and was like, keep it moving, Johnny, sing the Grease 2.
But I'm not even sure if it was out that he'd
Grease
2.
He did do that.
He did
sing some Grease in Grease 2.
But there we go. So that's the long form answer of why I don't do interviews properly. But I like the idea of this, of the movie Nightmares. It's, I think it does feel like the sort of thing. Is it one of them late night sort of switch off things?
Yeah, it's it's me or the test card, basically. Nice.
Do you remember Frank Sidebottom did the test card? It's well worth
that
watching.
Yeah.
On Channel M.
No, I don't remember that.
The Manchester... Yeah. Frank Sidebottom used to do the living test card.
Well, I just watched this documentary. Did you like it? Yes, I really liked it. Really good, yeah.
That rings a huge bell, but that went late 90s, was
loads
that?
Loads on... No, I think early 2000s, I think.
Oh, okay.
But
okay.
There were loads on YouTube now still. It's just him, literally, in a test card thing, just blagging it.
That was back in my Edinburgh Fringe Festival thing, was me as the test card, actually.
Nice. Yes. So go on, so that's what they...
Yes, so it's me hosting terrible movies, mostly. I did get to do a few nice ones, like Night of the Living Dead, which I went to see next door, actually, at
The live show,
really good. It was amazing. I had the best time. Because you're on stage at a Revolve, and they kind of, you're in grey overalls, so I looked like something from the 80s, and... but you think, why are we on stage and why is it a Revolve? And then they literally would, they did the whole of that one as the play.
Right.
Okay.
Spoilers. And then two, they kind of, and then they get to the point at the end of the movie. And then act two is what if? So they had several scenarios. Every time they did a what if, the Revolve went. So you're quite giddy
like
by
Clue.
The end of it. Yes, yeah, like the end of Clue. The end of Clue. But with body parts being splattered against you, covered in sort of stuff. So we entered, there's lots of selfies, but at the beginning, hi guys, all looking super shiny and cute. And by the end, we look like we've been in the garage for about 3 weeks.
Can I just ask, do you interrupt the show?
Yes, I do.
So like Mystery Science and all that sort of
stuff? Yeah, like Mystery Science. Yeah, I've just started, I haven't done on season 5, actually. Season 3 and 4, I started riffing. They call it riffing. And I've interviewed some of the guys in Mystery Science Theatre. And I was inspired by that. Turns out to be extremely hard.
It's all scripts in Mystery Science.
It's really hard.
Yeah, it's a bit scripts.
Really, really hard. So I'm just in the middle of the re-editing season 4 to go out in America because it was a half hour show. We're just trying to put the full movie in, so it's now an hour and a half again. It goes out on a Roku channel where it was all the horror hosts, and it goes out on those. So it's part of a gang. But the riffing is really cool. So I interrupted the advert breaks,
okay.
And I interrupt at sort of and sometimes, and I haven't done it for season 5 because it was a lot of work, and I thought the flow is kind of better.
Yeah.
You can do it easier when the movie's bad.
Yes, sure. Of course.
But if it's good, like I've done House on Haunted Hill, and you just can't really interrupt that.
But you could cut back to you just watching it.
Yeah, you could do.
Just quite happily watching it.
And also, I couldn't think of anything funny to say because it was really, you know, some films are really tight and actually really, when they've got huge plodding scenes where ridiculous things are happening. And obviously, comedy wise, that's the best. But it's harder to interject when it's good films. So it was so I do pop in and out of the film, and also just to keep people awake.
That's nicer. Do you know what? I think I'd really like it. I'm sort of looking forward to watching it. It's called Buddy Galore's Movie Nightmares. We've got to move on. But thank you so much. Thank you for coming
in. Thank you very much.
It's on Showcase
guys.
TV, right?
That's Showcase TV, and some on YouTube and Vimeo, and you know.
Brilliant, Bunny. Thank you.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Ian. Thank you very much.
No, make sure we use names.
We'll be right back.
sorry. That just, I can't condone that sort of behaviour. That was just deliberately controversial. So I'm going to put something else on that's a bit nicer. I'm sorry about that. That person, whoever that person was singing that song, I hope you're proud of yourself. I hope you think you're big.
The cover of an Ice-T song.
Well, what, with the fucking B and...
Well, this, I don't know if you're aware that the hip-hop lyrics, but often in those days, they did use the B word and still use the F word.
I find that very difficult to believe. You'll be telling me they use the N word next.
In the 80s.
Can you get George and Michael on the phone so I can talk to him about fading these out?
I'll get Ridgely on if you like.
I'd love that.
I don't know him.
Please get him. Please. We're joined now by Benedict Martin, our final guest of the day. How are you, sir?
Hello.
Oh, hi. Listen to the resonance there.
Hello.
This is proper actor, isn't it?
But yes. You've already missed your line, which was Call Me Ben. We'd rehearse this off.
Oh no, I've spent all day rehearsing that, haven't I?
Okay.
I'm not very good with lines.
So that's why, Nat made quite a fuss before we started then, where we were trying to work out whether to call you Ben or Benedict.
Yeah.
I'm happy to call you either.
You can call you Benedict.
Yeah, no, Ben.
Ben.
Okay.
Ben.
Let's start again.
Can be a line this time, Bernard.
Yeah. No, but we're talking about Horrible Histories, yeah. the live show.
We are.
Which is at the Apollo Theatre in Birmingham from the 1st to the 31st of August. And it's...
not the Apollo Theatre Birmingham.
Well, that's what I've been told.
I've got it somewhere. Where did it not say
no,
that?
No.
I had it on a
Come
press
on,
release.
Come on, Nat.
I had it on a press release.
Producer.
We're at the Apollo Theatre, London's glamorous West
London
End.
Apollo Theatre, Nat.
Yeah.
Not Birmingham.
I didn't even know if there was one in Birmingham.
Scum of the earth.
Said Birmingham somewhere.
We are the Birmingham Stage Company.
There we go.
That's it. That's where it's
the
from.
One.
Nat.
I forget my name. She forgets where the theatre is.
I think it wasn't that clear to me because it had the word Birmingham Stage Company that it was in London on the press release. But now we've cleared that up. I can't be the only one. It's in London, which is better because that's where we are.
Well, it's not. I live close to Birmingham.
Now you're furious. Because it's
it
not
was
in
better
Birmingham.
For me to
is
be in Birmingham.
Is there an Apollo Theatre? There is an Apollo Theatre in Birmingham, right?
No, there's an Alex Theatre.
No, you said you'd been to it.
Well, no, I asked, was that theatre I went to? I can't remember what it was called.
It wasn't called Apollo, as we said earlier.
Evidently not. So I take everything back that I said earlier.
About that
So has it been a tour, though, or is it just
Yeah, we've done a tour. We started...
Did you do Birmingham?
We did near Birmingham.
Did the Apollo Theatre in Birmingham?
The
it's
Apollo,
nice.
Of
good,
course.
I hear
it's
good
beautiful.
About that,
yeah. In fact, we set it up.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And then they actually did say, well, they closed it down straight away after the show, didn't they? Yeah. It's good.
Yeah, it was a 2-day affair. Yeah. No, we did. We went quite close, Lichfield, and where's the place that Colin? I can't remember his name. Where did we go? Anyway, near there.
You've Walsall, been about the place,
but we've been everywhere.
Mm. Okay, and is this the culmination of the tour now? Is this where you land?
This is where we land.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's back by popular demand because it was here last summer.
Okay.
And it's part four, Barmy Britain part four, it's called. You don't have to see the other three parts for it. It's, it's not like some kind of, you know.
I still feel like I had to have done that. I'd still feel like I'd missed something. Mm.
Often, I don't think so. Often it takes like three times to warm up. By the fourth, it's at its best, it's ready to go. Disregard the other three.
Oh, yeah.
Don't worry about that. Star Wars, for instance.
Yeah.
Have you been in all of them?
I was in the very first one we did in 2005, it was.
Okay.
So we did the stage version of Horrible Histories. We did the Terrible Tudors and the Vile Victorians.
Okay.
And that was a tour all around the country in big theatres with 3D. Second half goes into 3D, so you got your glasses.
We were speaking about this earlier on.
Were you?
And everyone looked at me like I was stupid when I said
with
there
the
was
first,
3D
our first
theater.
Guest, Edwin, yep. about, yep. yeah.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
And it was called Boggle Vision. That's
nice,
right.
Nice.
And so the all kids get to wear these rather stupid glasses, but and the set all comes out and flies out at them. So the Spanish Armada flying out.
Wow, okay, lovely.
And, Egyptian mummies.
Yeah.
So they're on tour at the moment actually doing Egyptians and Tudors as well. Right. The big shows in the big theatres. And we're just a two-hander.
Right, okay.
So it's an hour, 10-minute show with just two of us, me and the wonderful Pip Chamberlain. And we are just on stage with two coat stands, basically.
Okay.
And we do about 15 mad costume changes.
Brilliant.
He does more, actually. And we go from Romans up to Victorian times all the way through. Mad
so
singing and dancing.
Was Horrible Histories was a TV show, right?
Yes.
Is that right?
BBC,
or was it a book first? Or what was it?
I think it was
a book. Yeah, the book books first came out. A guy called Terry Deary wrote these books, which suddenly changed kids' attitude to history, which was, you know, in our day, was boring, stuffy and...
But it's impressive to do to actually focus on something like that and go, I can make this relevant again.
Yeah.
I can make this, you know, I can appeal in the right ways. That, you know, I really like when literature does that sort of stuff, when somebody pinpoints a way of doing it, of essentially tricking kids into learning.
Yeah.
Like, and you never run out. There's you can't run out of history. And
you could get to present day and then you knackered.
Well, you can.
Do you cheat it like the Freddie Mercury film, just make history up?
Can't make it up.
She's a bit upset.
Well, watch Bohemian Rhapsody. They did it there, didn't they? I didn't know that I hated the film until today. And so I watched it and thought, well, it's all right, isn't it? And then when Ian brought up quite rightly that the thing between Freddie Mercury and the Queen and the last show was like a good, 10 years? Freddie Mercury performing live. I went, I hate this film now.
Because things
it is literally a horrible history of lies.
They use his illness as a denouement in the film.
Yes.
When he wasn't even ill at that point.
No.
Oh,
they sort of announced it. That,
it's tricky, though, isn't it? Because can you can you squeeze everything into one show? So you have
you
to kind of sometimes.
You? No, you do, but it's
because then you've got to cut the
boring. That's fundamental, though, isn't it?
Sure.
Like, sort of, if it was like because they within that film spoiler if you've not seen it, but they. He announces his illness to the band.
What, before
either
Live
the
Aid,
day of, or yeah, like just of right Live before Live Aid. It's like, but he wasn't even ill then.
No, it didn't really happen.
It was years later that happened. And they never split up either. They didn't split up at any point.
But
Queen.
If you're like, oh, it's 90 minutes or 2 hours, it probably is. We run out of time. Then just do a thing at the end where it just catches up on the text. What actually happened after Live Aid?
Nat has
this?
A very.
Yeah, I can see.
With anything like that, she has a very much like. I'll just stick it on the end.
On the credit.
Yeah, on the credit.
And then for distribution, because I just. Put it in an Odeon. That's her take.
I did once say to clarify this, which it makes no sense with the guest, she asked how to get a film distributed, and I said, pop it in an Odeon. I didn't think it through what I said.
No.
Like, I don't think you can pop it up to a cinema and just hand them a VHS copy and go, pop it in.
Pop it in,
but
love.
Shove that on. There's nothing at the moment.
Yeah, go on.
But I did accidentally say, and as soon as I said it, I thought, well, that's ridiculous,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
But obviously, being Ian, didn't just let that one drop, did you? No,
no, I'm still talking about it now, a year later.
But yes, it's you can. It's great that kids having a good laugh at poo, usually poo, usually farts.
Yeah, yeah.
Still laughed at it now.
Yeah, exactly. But then actually come out and going, but I remember this bit and that bit and what happened to Anne Boleyn or what happened to
I'd cut off. Yeah.
She doesn't need come. She knows it all.
No, I don't know quite how it happened. I think he was fancying Jane Seymour, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
What happened?
Oh,
that's why he got her eyes cut off.
Yeah,
can we get that tickets? Can you go? Can we do some learning?
I'd like to.
And then at the end,
right on the tutors.
We'll just cram it in at the end and just write a bit at the top.
The stuff we
missed. Yeah, this is the stuff
maybe
we missed.
Maybe didn't have time for all six wives. Yeah, yeah, I don't know. Cram in five wives.
Never mind four parts. All the bits you missed, put it at the end. Just hold it up on a.
Yeah.
And then there was a war.
Yeah.
Is it how engaged are you still with it? So it's a long running thing. How as a person, how difficult is it at this stage when you've been on a tour and you know you land at the end and all the rest of it? How difficult is it to maintain the momentum of that for yourself?
Oh, I don't think it's that hard, really. I mean, I've done some of the bigger ones for about 11 months.
Yeah,
and sometimes you get a bit of a dip. You're going, I just want to go home for But you're still, every show is different. Mm. You know, something will happen, something will be slightly different. And certainly with a two-hander, you haven't got time to even think that. It's just a mad kind of, you just jump on the train and it...
Because you're not off stage then, I presume.
No,
you're
never
off, so yeah.
Yeah. And also I've had 6 weeks off, so I've forgotten it all anyway.
Okay. Well, I also think the nice thing with a tour is that idea that you sort of, you reset quite regularly with a tour. You know, you get new venue and you're like, okay, so you sort of reset in a new place then.
Yeah.
And I guess it's all, even though it won't feel that way in terms of you're not saving the best till last, but you are aiming at the finale. You're aiming at the culmination of the tour.
Well, it's a nice way to end in town.
Yeah, it really is.
In town. Yeah,
in the West End. Yeah,
which is great. That's fantastic. But it's wherever you are, you're going, oh, I haven't been, you know, new place, new places, you know, new theatres, different people, different stuff. So it's always different.
And what's your plan once this is finished? So you finish, it's the 6th to the 31st, so what happens at the 31st for you?
I sell the big issue.
Outside Caledonia. Do you know what you're doing next?
No, not a clue.
Is that exciting or not?
It can be.
Yeah.
This time it's panicking.
Is it getting too close?
Yeah, it's getting too close. I mean, we're
idiots.
Move it back
to Birmingham.
Yeah,
Go to the Apollo. Go to the Apollo in Birmingham.
But you know, you kind of choose this lifestyle because you think that's part of the package. And you don't know what's happening next. You don't want you know where you're going, what you're doing, which can be exciting, but at the same time, when you're trying to get another loan from the bank, and
of course,
you've got no money, etc. That's the difficult bit. But that's the nature.
But I was saying earlier on that
so
that's
many jobs
any job nowadays.
Yeah.
Any job.
As soon as you go freelance, you're always going.
But every job's freelance now. They all are. There's no such thing as you start when you're 18 and then you're there.
That's your apprenticeship, and that's
it just isn't a thing anymore. No, it doesn't happen.
So we're quite used to it, you know.
Yeah, and you might as well do
freak
something
me out
then
so much,
that isn't just soul destroying. We're all insecure, so I'll do a bit of showing off on the stage for a bit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one minute I'm playing, mad Samuel Pepys on stage, and next minute you're a policeman on some TV thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's always no.
It is exciting. Well, and also because you're in London as well, then you've got three or four weeks audition now, aren't you? You can sort of like show yourself off.
Of course, and they'll be lining up to see me, won't they?
And it'll get round. It'll be like, have you seen?
Oh yeah.
Have you seen Benedict? Yeah, oh, where's Chris?
Yeah.
Oh, you should see. You need to go down there. And even the people, do you know what? The people in the industry, they're that thick that they wouldn't even go and see it. If someone just tells them, they'll go, I'll put him in my thing as well. I've not got time to go and see it because I've got wine to drink.
Yeah.
But I'll just put him in this anyway. Yeah.
And I'll say it was wonderful.
Yeah.
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 That's all right.
And before that, before you know it, you're Claudius at the RSC by Christmas.
Yeah. Can you be my agent?
Yeah. I'm not sure.
I'll be more like the Apollo Birmingham.
Not sure. Yeah. I think I'd be a brilliant agent. I'm not sure that I could morally lower myself to that level. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know what to do. I just couldn't do it. Yeah. I just couldn't bring myself to do it.
Just tell me what to do. I'll do it.
Let's be an agent.
I'll be your mouthpiece.
I don't think you've got it in you either.
No, because I would find some things that I'll finish
with too. I think you'd end up crying.
Why would I? Why?
I just do. I think it's
dirty
just
dealings.
It's a cunt's profession.
That's the nicest compliment he's ever given me. Literally the only word I can come up with for it.
You know,
right.
But I think any industry, certainly in the entertainment industry anyway, anyone's industry.
Is a way to do it without being a...
There's a few.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a few that are all right. I do mean few.
Okay.
They're not the majority at all. But there are a few good people and good-hearted and... Heart's in the right place. This is a very downbeat way to end it.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah, we're supposed to be lifting
it up. Lift it up again.
Lift.
Hang on, I'll put a funny sound effect on for a minute.
Okay,
There we go. Some chickens.
That's more like it.
That was Thingy sound effect, wasn't it? Oh, it's fucking John Gaunt sound effect. I've just played it. Well, look, I'm sure something will come in. Something always comes in.
Of course, it always happens.
Yeah. It does always happen.
Yeah.
Same as like relationships or whatever. There's always another person, should it come to that. Should you wish for one, there's always another person when things break down. So, likewise, there will be another job. It's on its way. And let's not get distracted with that because you have a job in hand.
No, I've got a job. I'm in the lovely West End doing lovely, horrible histories.
And there are people at the moment who are sat at home panicking because they've not had a job for ages. So at least your panic is just like, when this job ends, will I get another one?
This is at the end of August.
Yes.
Yeah. But I'm not going to sit there and be distracted.
No.
I wish I had the Rocky music. Have I got the Rocky music?
I don't know. It might be on there. I'm not sure.
Well, let's just pretend it was playing.
Yeah.
Listen, it's been a genuine lovely chat. Yeah. I'll tell you what I'm doing at the moment, Nat. Yeah. I don't know how long this show's
been. I can tell you how long we've got.
Because we're on pre-record.
55, and we started. We're on.
Oh, fine. So I can start that music.
You can play Star Wars music. Yeah.
This is all behind the scenes shit. No, it has been genuine pleasure meeting you and chatting with you and stuff. And best of luck with Horrible Histories.
Thank you.
And now, because I've not got that on the screen, I can't see the dates. It's the 6th to the 31st of August
at the Apollo Theatre in London.
Ignore what we said earlier on. It's not Birmingham.
I think we've made it quite clear. Birmingham
is where they store their props.
If anyone goes to Birmingham after this interview, I'm not being funny, they're a bit of an idiot. Because we've made it very clear that it's in London, not in Birmingham.
It is actually where they store their props.
Yeah, of course it would be.
Because you're from the Birmingham Stage Company.
Yeah, of course it would.
That makes sense.
Birmingham Stage Company, Apollo Theatre. The whole of August.
That wasn't me. You look genuinely impressed then. That wasn't me being a Jedi. I just put two and two together. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. How does he know these things?
Psychic. I thought today is also psychic.
Benedict Martin, thank you so much for coming in.
Lovely.
Thank you for
joining
us today.
Lovely.
Thank you to Edwin Ashcroft. Thank you to Bunny Galore. Thank you, Natalie.
We shall see you
again next week for more hilarious sound effects on this fast moving, fun show. That's a bit like Russ Abbott's Madhouse, is what I've decided.
You've been listening to a FUBAR Radio podcast. For more information, go to FUBARradio.com.